Good morning,
Good
Chair.
morning.
Good morning, Chair. But
Oh, that's
my very, very bad. We have no electricity, Chairperson. Sometimes I will not be able to hear what you are saying.
Oh,
the load shed, Chair.
You have helped me because I also thought that nobody would hear me. I've used somebody else's laptop. Now we'll understand. It's already 9 o'clock now. We should be starting the meeting. Portfolio Committee Secretary, can we start? Can see the minister.
Yes, can we start? Yes, Chair, I believe we can start. And I would like to also indicate that I'll be standing in for Sharon today.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
No, thanks. Honorable members, the meeting is formally open. We are 1 minute late. Let me welcome you, welcome the minister and the deputy ministers. I've not been able to go through the list of participants. I'll be making assumptions that the DG is there for DCOG as well as the DG for DTA. And assume as well that we also have Mesa. Let me welcome the minister, DMs, and the teams led by the DGs, and indicate immediately that we'll start with the report from the recent floods in KwaZulu-Natal, and indicate to the minister that I did write a letter to you, minister, but the attempt was just to get a sense of what we should be doing as the portfolio committee. We should always move from a basis that says there's this information before us, and on the basis of that, if we want to have a foundation for that, then we go and guided by that to establish whatever that would guide our oversight. But obviously, because of the scale of the problem, everybody had interest. Actually, it didn't only draw our interest, the whole world actually focused on what happened in the country and in particular the province. So that is why we felt it would help us to have a sense as to where are we now, what are the issues, so that we can as well, because everybody is keen to get into the ground as to what do we go there to do. I'm sure out of this update would be able to be guided. And I think beyond that, it would be the annual performance plans of DCOG, DTA, and MISA. But let's start with this one. Welcome, Minister. Can I hand over to you?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all the members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Ministers, the CGs, and all the officials who are on the platform. Let me first just thank you for your understanding, Chairperson, that at the time, it was just too early to have a presentation, but today we're able to present. But just as way of introduction, which you already know, that the country, but particularly the KZN, was affected by a huge amount of rain. One weekend, some parts of KZN got rain equivalent to almost more than 100 days of rain that they normally get. So this caused floods, which left a trail of destruction, not only on the infrastructure, but also on human lives. There are lots of heart-wrenching stories of how people lost their loved ones in a blink of an eye in the flood. But let me just say, generally, the scientists have been telling us that with climate change, the country will more or less have two different types of climate. The eastern part will be wetter and frequent floods, with frequent floods. The western part will be drier with frequent droughts, but somehow maybe we thought it was still in the distant future, but clearly it is with us now. And so as we deal with this, with the aftermath of the floods, we should also be looking seriously at the risk management so that when we do build back what is destroyed, we take that into account. But without wasting time, because I see the agenda is very long, I'll hand over to the DG to do the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning to the Honourable Chairperson. I also want to greet our Minister and our Deputy Ministers, and I also want to greet all colleagues that are here present. With your permission, Chairperson, I am joined by two of our colleagues in the disaster management area, Ms. Prevere and also Ms. Kolokoto. And I would request that they take us through this presentation, and I will do the following one. So with your permission, and not to waste time, I'd like to just hand over to them. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks.
Annette, may proceed.
Good morning. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and committee members, DG and Minister and Deputy Ministers. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I just want to confirm that you can see the screen.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Yes. My name is Anna Brubel, and I am currently the acting head of the National Disaster Management Center. And I will just take you through this briefing on the coordination of response and recovery efforts to flooding incidents, specifically focusing on KZN. So the purpose of the presentation is to provide the portfolio committee with an update on the national disaster that has affected KZN province, as well as intervention measures by organs of state. The focus is specifically on the following as requested by the portfolio committee. Basically, it's about the extent of the damage caused by the floods, the immediate relief measures that were put in place to house families left homeless, how the province and national government are assisting the Itikweni Metro with the challenge of providing drinkable water to communities, disaster management plans that are in place for the province and support provided by sector departments, resources for the management of the disaster and areas requiring strategic intervention. So as you are aware, the country has been experiencing torrential rains that persisted in parts of the country, but most of the damages were experienced in KZN as a result of flooding and mudslides. The department through the National Disaster Management Center continues to coordinate response and recovery measures by the relevant organs of state and stakeholders. And it also includes dissemination of early warnings and advisories on weather forecasts by the South African Weather Services. Organs of state across spheres of government activated their respective contingency arrangements in line with their legislative mandates. And we have also put in place institutional arrangements to deal with the disaster, which are in place across the spheres of government. Updated progress reports are being regularly received from affected provinces and national sector departments to improve the coordination and interventions where required. In this slide, you can see the spatial view of affected districts, particularly in KZN, and where the red depicts the most severe damage along the coast. And I think we have also learned from the media reports that Itikweni in particular is very badly affected. Just to give you an overview of some of the effects on households, more than 17,600 households were affected. A total number of 5,672 households were totally destroyed. More than 9,500 houses were partially destroyed. Then if we look at the number of affected people, in excess of 123,000 have been affected. A total of 435 fatalities have been reported. There are still a number of 53 people missing. A total of 6,342 are homeless, and a total of 40 people were reported that have been injured. Then most of the sectors have been affected, and we mentioned the agriculture, water and sanitation, education, public works, and other sectors as well, health, human settlements, etc. Then if we just refer back to the map, all 10 of the districts have been affected, and also the Itikweni Metro indicated in with some changes in severity. So if we look at the interventions by national government, the processes in terms of our Disaster Management Act is about classification and declaration of state of disaster. And originally, the KZN disaster was classified as a provincial disaster, but following a reassessment of the conditions, the NDMC resolved to reclassify the disaster as a national disaster in terms of the Act. And classification basically assigns primary responsibility to a particular sphere of government to manage and coordinate the disaster. And therefore, if it is a national disaster, that responsibility lies with national government. Furthermore, classification also enables reallocation of funds by the affected municipalities and provincial departments from their own applicable grants to augment the resources for intervention measures. And that is in accordance with the Division of Revenue Act. And then our minister, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, also declared a national state of disaster on the impact of severe weather events in terms of Section 27 of the Act. And a notice to this effect was published in the Government Gazette on the 18th of April. And the primary purpose of the declaration is then to augment existing legislation and contingency arrangements. of the affected organs of state, as well as to activate other extraordinary measures as and when required. This slide talks to the institutional arrangements that are in place in terms of the legislation and also in terms of our internal arrangements. So at the top, we have the Intergovernmental Committee on Disaster Management, which is chaired by our minister. And the members of that committee are cabinet members, the MECs of each of the provinces, and also members of municipal councils. Then we have the National Disaster Management Advisory Forum, which is also a structure that is described in the Disaster Management Act, where the head of the National Disaster Management Center is the chair, and the members of that structure, senior representatives of national departments, provincial departments, SALSA, and other experts. And then specifically to deal with the floods, we have the National Joint Flood Coordination Committee, which is extended to the DGs as well. And it is chaired by the DG of Cooperative Governance, or the head of the National Disaster Management Center, and the members are also the provincial disaster management centers, the national sectors, relevant state-owned entities, and SALGA. Then we have put in place the National Disaster Operations Center, where we also receive information. And develop reports on the situation. And we have established nine work streams to deal with specific areas to cluster the tasks together. And we have there the health and medical services, humanitarian relief and donor support, early warning, food and nutrition, and communication and community mobilization, infrastructure interventions, security and emergency search and rescue, economic recovery and reconstruction, and also then the finance and international contribution coordination. So those are the particular work streams or task streams, and it is shared by different government departments. So, in addition, the National Disaster Management Center developed an integrated multi-sectoral flood response and recovery plan, with the primary objectives being to outline the integrated response and recovery efforts by all organs of state and stakeholders to be implemented within the affected community. The scope of the plan covers the integrated institutional arrangements with clear roles and responsibilities, disaster risk assessment and risk reduction efforts, mobilization of funding and other required resources, and then enhanced monitoring, oversight, auditing, and reporting. That is basically the content of the plan. And then if we just look at the overall government response and recovery approach, as also introduced by the president, the first phase is immediate humanitarian relief, ensuring that all affected persons are safe and that their basic needs are met. Then we look at the second phase is stabilization and recovery, where the focus is on rehousing people who have lost homes and restoring provision of services. And then the third phase is the rehabilitation and reconstruction phase, where we focus on building back better. So this does not only involve the construction and repair of major infrastructure, but also involves the construction of houses and damaged infrastructure within suitably located areas, including measures to protect the residents of these areas from such adverse weather events in the future. This slide also depicts all the interventions by government-relevant organs of state, as well as through support of the private sector, NGOs, civil society, and communities. And in particular, government communication and information services, as the convener of the communications and community mobilization technical task team, coordinates enhancement of government messaging to the public, including community mobilization within affected communities. So you can see every day there is a media message that goes out indicating what government is doing and what support is provided by all sectors of society. In terms of DWS support to eThekwini Metro in addressing the challenge of providing drinkable water to the community, some of the key interventions that they've undertaken is they hired 82 water tankers for a period of 3 months. Most of it is for eThekwini, but also 28 for Ugu and 12 for Ilembe to provide water. The minister visited the province on 15 April, meeting with the affected municipalities that are water service authorities and water boards to receive the reports. They also established a water and sanitation war room headed by the eThekwini Metro Municipality to deal with the issues. And DWS further deployed 18 specialists comprising civil engineers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, dam safety engineers and water quality scientists to the water and sanitation war room to assist the municipalities in the assessment of the flood damage to water infrastructure and to recommend particular interventions. If we look at the humanitarian interventions, specifically the shelters, there's quite a number of humanitarian relief efforts that are being coordinated within the province. And various organizations contribute through donations to support the community. So that is just a summary of, you know, in which areas the support is provided and what kind of support, hot meals, blankets, etc. And specifically, this slide refers to the contribution of the Red Cross Society. There's also free medical assistance. Then the gift of the givers have also provided a lot of support in various municipal areas by providing hot meals, blankets, bottled water, food parcels, and also brooms and mops and things like that, sanitary ware, etc. in various areas across the province. There's quite a lot of information from the gift of the givers, they have a very big footprint in their province, and they work in most of the areas. Then there are also a number of other organizations that contributed. A number of them include Bates, Isuzu, MTN, Old Mutual, SADC, SASCO, the CUDA Events and Projects, Ocean Galaxy and Progressive Professional Forum, and all of them have provided support to affected families. That is just some of the pictures that you can see and in the areas that they have been working on. There's also financial contributions apart from the in-kind support, you know, there's mention of SASL, but also AFGOP, who have provided 20,000 rand per person for bereaved families. Vodacom has contributed 3 million, and then Praza has contributed water. Some of the financial institutions donated funds to gift of the givers, specifically for food parcels. Also for hot meals and blankets, APSA, as well as some of the other organizations, and also the Mutete Foundation has contributed extensively, specifically for burial assistance, and also vouchers and mattresses and potable water. In eThekwini, there was also quite a lot of support by our foreign representatives in the country, the Chinese consulate, the Belgian consulate, and then also other foundations and organizations. So there has been quite a lot of of support from all sectors of society to provide support to families across of affected families across the city and the province. I'm not going to go through each of those, but there you can also see some of the smaller organizations that also provided support and specifically also water. There's just some examples of the donations that have been given and some of the humanitarian support to affected families. Then we also have the Department of Social Development intervened and provided support to affected communities. So they form part of and participate in all the structures across the spheres and convenes the technical task team on humanitarian support and donor coordination. They are also doing ongoing assessments. The priority is placed on providing immediate support to women, children, older persons, and persons with disabilities. They're also providing hot-cooked meals, blankets, and dignity packs, and they're working really closely with NPOs, churches, corporates, and committee members to displace individuals housed in these shelters. Also the schools and community halls and the community nutrition and development centers. And there they've also been providing the support. They also provide psychosocial support and debriefings with families and individuals in affected communities, SASA. And then they provide grants amounting to 1.8 million. They also provided uniforms to the value of 372,000 rand for school children. And it's largely in the Ekurhuleni and Ilembe district that this is currently happening. And then they also provide social relief of distress to affected communities through SASA. And this is at 1,200 rand per individual up to 3 months. This contribution is in the form of vouchers or food parcels or cash. And in case of a deceased family member, they provide 1,980 rand times two to the family to assist the funerals. They also provide school uniform for children in need. The Department of Social Development is engaging with corporates and stakeholders to provide support in the form of urgent humanitarian relief for affected areas and has two dedicated storage facilities in Pietermaritzburg and Dube Trade Port in Durban as well. And Minister Zulu visited some of the wards and Mandeni LMS in local municipalities in Ilembe to engage, support and provide social relief of distress to affected communities. There has also been interventions by traditional authorities and leaders and various traditional authorities and leaders continue to contribute and mobilize communities and stakeholders in support of the response and intervention measures in the province. Mrs. Zulu Kazwelitili and other traditional authorities, including leaders, have been mobilizing communities in the rebuilding of the province. And then we also have the Umgungodla Women's Forum, which is female traditional leaders and spouses to traditional leaders, collaborating with Mbumba Foundation, Old Mutual, the IDC, and Ukosi FM, who provide humanitarian relief, especially food parcels and blankets to affected families. And there you can also see a picture of them assisting there. I think you can see that we have received overwhelming support and contributions from civil society organizations, both formal and informal, as well as faith-based organizations, including individual community members. And there's just some of the organizations and individuals that made contributions, and the list is ongoing. Then there was a specific request to indicate the status of disaster management plans for Cape Town province and support by sector departments. And there you can see that we have received quite a number of disaster management plans, but there are also a few municipalities that have not yet submitted. So we are engaging with the KZN province and the provincial disaster management centres to ensure that they update their plans and that they can implement them. So in total, there has been 10 plans that have been developed by the district municipalities and 11 plans that have been developed and submitted by local municipalities. The KZN province through the PDMC established integrated institutional capacity for disaster management as prescribed by Key Performance Area 1 of the National Disaster Management Framework. So they have already made some good progress in the province to establish these structures. Various structures are functional, such as the Provincial Disaster Management Advisory Forum, where they have representatives from the provincial sector departments, district municipalities, and the objective of that forum is to consult each other on matters relating to disaster management, as well as to ensure coordinated and effective response during incidents. So this forum is currently active and operational in KZN, and it is headed by the head of the national, or chaired by the head of the provincial disaster management center. Apologies. The structures are also replicated at the district level to ensure that regional sectors participate in the district advisory forum. And then the province is also very active in developing their seasonal disaster management contingency plans with clear roles and responsibilities of relevant stakeholders, and including the sector departments that play a crucial role in disaster management and during the response and recovery specifically. And in addition, a technical advisory committee is in place in the province consisting of experts and disaster management practitioners from various structures who are involved in the process of reviewing the disaster management plan. So if we look at the support to organs of state on the development and implementation of disaster management plans, just to give you an indication that following submission of the disaster management plans by the various organs of state, the National Disaster Management Center develops a municipal support schedule in line with one of our APP projects to provide support to a number of municipalities in priority disaster areas to prevent, prepare, and mitigate disaster risks with the implementation of the applicable disaster management plans. And furthermore, we assess disaster management plans to make sure that it meets the requirements of the Disaster Management Act, and then also to ensure that there's alignment with the guidelines on development and structure of a disaster management plan. And we also check whether these plans incorporate disaster risk reduction and climate change adaptation measures for inclusion into sector programs and projects as required by the priorities and targets of CINDIFE, of the CINDIFE framework for disaster risk reduction. So out of the 5 municipalities whose disaster management plans were assessed in the KZN province, the NDMC held engagement sessions with Itikweni and Kanyakude and the KZN PDMC to discuss their respective assessment feedbacks, and that were also shared with the custodians. Then the NDMC developed a support plan to assist and guide them to develop and update and review their plans. And we have also developed a guideline on the integration of disaster risk reduction and DDM1 plans of each district and metro. So these will be rolled out in all the provinces through the Provincial Disaster Management Center for the duration of the current financial year. So notable is that the district development model presents an opportunity that in the context of joint one plan and one budget, organs of state and institutional role players will be able to coordinate and align the implementation of their disaster management plans with those of the district and metros across the country. So that is a very important mechanism to ensure that, that risk reduction and risk-informed planning takes place in all the districts. This is just a brief overview of the disaster funding arrangements. And if you can see, there are different stages of funding, basically for mitigation and preparedness. We use the normal planning and operating budgets, you know, in each line function. And then when it is necessary for response and recovery, there is also additional funding mechanisms available through immediate response grants and emergency housing grants. And then in terms of recovery and rehabilitation, we look at unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure, and provision is made through the fiscal model. So existing normal budget and grants are available as per the Public Finance Management Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act. There is also reallocation of funding from existing municipal and sectoral grants as Section 19 of the DORA, the Division of Revenue Act. Then there's also emergency housing grants within human settlements. There's augmentation of resources through the National Disaster Management Center Disaster Relief Grants. And then both the National Treasury and the National Disaster Management Center issued circulars to provide guidance to organs of state regarding the source of funding and the processes to follow. If we look at the specific allocations for the 2022 MTAS period, and considering that the national state of disaster has been declared, a need for reprioritization, reallocation, and activation of extraordinary measures is required, and requests to National Treasury to draw down and presented by the Minister of Finance, they will activate these funds awaiting a request from the NDMC and Department of Human Settlements. So what we have in that allocation, the current allocations, is the Provincial Disaster Response Grant in excess of 145 million. The Provincial Emergency Housing Grant is in excess of 325 million. Then there's also the Municipal Disaster Response Grant, which is 371 odd million. And then the Municipal Emergency Housing Grant, which is 175 million. So those are the allocations that are available in the in the current system. And then we also have, there are also other existing grants to municipalities and sector departments for reallocation of funds to address disaster damages. And we are looking at municipal infrastructure grants, integrated urban development, urban settlements development, informal settlements, rural roads, regional bulk infrastructure, water services infrastructure. And then there are also some conditional grants to provinces that are available to deal with some of the effects of the disaster. When we focus on areas that require strategic intervention, we believe the key areas of concern is poor infrastructure planning and implementation, which reflects poor workmanship, resulting in recurring disaster damages, capacity constraints, apologies, also the establishment of human settlement in unsafe areas, which is a very great concern, and bylaws that are not enforced by responsible authorities. There is also a lack of action or delay in taking appropriate action when early warnings are issued, both organs of state and communities. And then there are also delays in, or non-implementation of service delivery projects from normal sectoral grants, and that funding is often reverted back to the national fiscus, with communities exposed to this. And then we also noted the non-reporting and lack of accountability for funding allocated to provinces and municipalities. So in conclusion, the coordination of response and recovery efforts continues with a focus on the immediate humanitarian relief, stabilization and recovery, as well as rehabilitation and reconstruction. And with the drastic spike of severe weather events and disaster damages, it is evident that the conditions cannot be addressed solely through funding, but it must also be addressed through better planning and building back better. And this requires a drastic change from government, stakeholders, private sector, communities, and everyone, and also the redirection of resources that focus on disaster risk reduction and mitigation measures. This is important for sustainability and resilience building within communities. Focus should also be on areas such as risk assessments, spatial planning, climate change adaptation measures, enforcement of bylaws, risk transfer measures, insurance, and others. Lastly, organs of state must focus on conducting disaster risk assessments to enable the development of practical and implementable disaster management plans. Risk-informed development planning is critical and should be implemented through the one plan process of each district phase. So we therefore recommend that the portfolio committee notes the update on the impact of severe weather events and intervention measures, particularly in state extent, as requested, notes the progress on multi-sectoral integrated interventions to ensure rapid and effective response to the disaster, as well as post-disaster recovery and rehabilitation. We request that the portfolio committee provide support in advocating disaster risk reduction and mitigation measures within communities for sustainability and resilience building in the province, but also in the country. And we request the portfolio committee to encourage municipalities within KZN province to develop, update, review, and submit their disaster management plans to the National Disaster Management Center. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think that's the presentation. And in terms of the plan, we have exceeded our time by 10 minutes, so I don't intend taking any further minutes. Now, this is our time for engaging with this, whether it's issues for clarity, comments. I see Honorable Mkalip, you are number one. Honorable Spies, you are number two. Honorable Matumba, you are number three. And Honorable Teresa, number four. Honorable Kabanchawa, number five. Keep your order. Honorable Mkalip.
Oh, good morning to you, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues. Thanks very much for the opportunity, and we welcome the presentation. Chair, first of all, I just want to express my disappointment to say that as an COCTA portfolio committee, we're supposed to be long gone to go to these areas that were affected by disaster in KZN and also some parts of the Eastern Cape. And I'm becoming very worried if we are a portfolio committee that is not there with the people when they are faced with such disaster. And we are just waiting for the department to come and brief us there on Zoom, as if we don't take serious the plight of the people, especially the poorest of the poor. I hope that the chair will forever try to engage with the chairs of chairs, Honorable Floric, to persuade him in Parliament for us to go and do oversight, just to show Ubuntu as a portfolio committee who is also seized with the matter of disasters. That is number one. Secondly, I think that also this brief is very late. One, we have written to the chair to ask the chair to ask the minister to come and brief us when it was still fresh. I'm not saying now everything has been resolved or there's nothing that has been resolved so far, because we also part and parcel of those people in KZN in particular. So now the response that we got from the minister, I don't think it was proper to say that they are still trying to get some more information, because the moment the disaster happened, as per this presentation and some of the part of the presentation says that some of the ministers were there on the ground. So we wanted to get first-hand information as a portfolio committee as well in that regard. But getting information this late, I don't think is proper, Chairperson. Those are my two concerns in terms of the disaster itself. But coming to engage with the presentation, Chair, as much as we welcome the presentation, but Chair, my most important discomfort is the response of the disaster management. Who's supposed to coordinate with other relevant department? So when it happens, this thing of disaster in KZN, starting from the 11th of April or before that, even now, there are families who have not even seen any single politician or any single official from the disaster management. Other people who are activists on the ground who are there just to save lives and also just to comfort families, because this disaster was very heavy, Chairperson, in such a way that most of the family members have lost their families members and they have not even have a clue to where are they. They are not found even now as we speak, Chair. So other activists suggested that let us write some list and send it to the department, to the disaster management section. Up until now, there is not feedback from the disaster management pertaining to that list that were sent to them. No one is giving anyone feedback. No one is saying anything after the list that was submitted. Right. There are departments such as social development and Department of Human Settlement. I don't want to talk about human settlement because that department is a disaster on itself. People have lost their houses here. No one from the department is coming to the people and telling people how is their plan to rebuild houses. We know for the fact that people who've lost their houses are the people who does not have proper houses. But the department is missing in action, is nowhere to be found. SASA, which is the social development, they have intervened. I just want to also not to put in clear all the time, but I must also say, if there is something that was done promptly, I must also say, Chair, this time the Department of Social Development, they tried their level best. And I'm saying this because the CEO of SASA is a very, very active CEO that I have ever met since I became an activist. You send her WhatsApp, she responds. She does not complain, even if it's at night. And she intervenes. I mean, that is the type of officials that we are looking for in this particular government. So I'm saying to this Chair, they intervened promptly, whereby people were given some food parcels, but the offices of SASA in some parts of the country, for instance in KZN, they are also taking advantage of the poorest of the poor. I'll mention one. SASA in Phoenix. People went there and get vouchers to go and get some intervention. And then the voucher is strictly directing people to a particular shop, which is very far from those people. For instance, in SASA in Phoenix, they have made an arrangement with Brown Cash and Carry. And a person from MAO, they must take two taxis to go to Brown Cash and Carry. And then you begin to ask yourself, if there were some arrangements with the retailer shops, why the retailer shops around Phoenix Plaza was not engaged to? There is one. A poorest of the poor got there because he wanted to get something to eat. When she arrived there, I'm talking about a particular woman who raised this point with me. When she arrived there in that brown cash and carry retail shop, there is a list already provided to them. Please take items from this list. And the woman saying, no, I have three children. My children need to have a porridge. They must eat porridge. And the people from that cash and carry are saying, no, we are not allowed to take some items that are not provided in this list. Okay, they came to me and then they tell me that, no, there's that situation. I intervened. I sent an SMS to the Minister of Social Development. Did she even try to ask what is happening and so on? No. Until I have to go back to SASSA in Phoenix and ask them, what are you doing to poor people who are affected, who have lost their people, who have lost their family members? What is this now? Which act does it permit you to do this? No answer. That is one chairperson. On the issue of water tankers, Chair, even now people are struggling because we know what this disaster has done in terms of disturbing the infrastructure and so forth. But there is no water tankers that are providing people with water. That's why people in KZN and in parts of the KZN and especially in Etequene are up in arms, are blocking roads because there are no water that are provided. People are going days by days without provided water. And there's no plan to provide water to those communities. It's a disaster, Chairperson. So, Chair, when the disaster started, some of the people in KZN, bakhe osebeni lomfula, bahleli at the bank of the river, which is also a flood zone on its own. So now, my question is, athini ama interventions from the municipality to alert these people while there's no disaster? I hear the minister speaking about the climate change, but now the role of the municipality and all other stakeholders in government to alert those people, abahleli osebeni lomfula, there is no plan to tell people, no, here you must not erect any structure in the form of a house, and we are going to provide you with a proper land whereby you must go and build your house. No, there's nothing. The minister will know because she knows the areas in KZN. There is Amawuti minister. Police station. That land was declared long time ago as a flood zone. But there is no campaign, there's no strategy from the municipality to just to alert people that know you are in a danger zone. People there, they have died in numbers in that area. So those are the people who are housed in a community hall known as Amawuti. And those people who are housed there, the disaster management have provided food for them. Etegwini disaster management have provided food for them. But what is happening? They have identified umama on the NPO, which is not even known in the community. Umama is locking the food from the people. When you go and visit Amawuti Community Hall, people are telling you that we are hungry here, but there is food there in that container. When we make a follow-up with a disaster management person at Etequene municipality, saying no, but this person was told specifically to cook for these people. But there's no one who's making a follow-up to ensure that those people are there in that community hall are eating. There is one point. Secondly, there's no one who's telling these people we are going to be here until when. Because most of the people, they want to go back to their houses. They want to rebuild their homes. But there's no clarity. There's no visitation. There's no one. There's no counselor. There's nothing, Chair. When we debated last week, when the president of the country came and addressed the nation on floods, I was the one who was sent by the EFF to speak on behalf of the EFF. I mentioned specific cases because I also from Etequene municipality. I said on that day amongst the things that I mentioned, the family of Buthelezi have lost three family members, let alone that the municipality of Etequene have announced that those family who have lost their family members, they are going to be assisted with 15,000 rand. The councillor of Ward 59, Councillor Mhlongo, were also phoned by a radio station, a local radio station, to say that there is this situation in this ward. He didn't even go and support the family, not just to find out if you guys do have any means to bury your family members. Nothing. Omakhelwane had to come and assist the family. After even I have raised that issue, Chairperson, the Premier was there in Parliament. He even said to me, give me the numbers of the family so I can make a follow-up. Even till today, there's no one who have contacted the family. Chairperson, there is no proper coordination here. We can come here with a beautiful presentation and said different stakeholders have assisted families, but we are looking from the department itself. You know, when this disaster came, when this disaster started in KZN, I engaged with different stakeholders, especially in the disaster management. I said, there is this particular house, Ohlele Mfulweni, but in a formal settlement. And there are some also a report that says this rain is also going to continue during the weekend. Now, just send a people from the department to come and check if this river is not blocked. Just send a person just to come and check if it's not blocked, because the family ibalekile yaze yoqasha kamakhelwane ngoba umfula ubusuzo usungene waze wazongena endlini. Even till today, there is no single person from the municipality who have just came and checked if that river has some blockages or needs to be unblocked or whatsoever. And when I engage with the disaster management here at a national level, I'm asking, can't you give me someone from that municipality here who's going to assist this family, because this family is in danger? A person that was activated by the disaster management here keep on telling me that, no, they are still coming, they are still coming. But now my problem, Chairperson, for how long that we must, as this portfolio committee, we must just make noise, and after this, it will be just the thing of the past. Because the real effect of the matter is that there is no proper coordination in disaster. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Number two.
Yes, Chairperson, that's me.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I want to just add on what Honorable Mkalipi has said. It is very clear that on the ground, there is a, and what this represented to us, there is a total disconnect between what is happening on the ground and what is reported to us. At this very point, people are saying that officials cannot be contacted. It's either their phones are off. Councillors are running around because they must do what they can with what they have. There is uncertainty as to where the disaster management center is located. There's uncertainty as to who's actually handling donations and how some of these donations are handled. I have seen that many institutions have donated in financial means terms, but I want to understand what has been put together or established to make sure that these financial donations are going to the right channels. Now, Chair, in one of the slides, Ms. Brevere has said that the one specifically speaking to the disaster response and recovery approach, one of the three steps is that immediate humanitarian relief, making sure that everyone is safe, and then I think making sure that everyone's basic needs are met. The fact of the matter, as has been mentioned by Honorable Mkalipi, is that people are still without water. How do you explain, Minister, 70 tankers being provided, water tankers, to a population of over 4 million people? Interventions are underway. There is a water and sanitation war room. These are all things that are mentioned, but none of these things are actually being detailed. You know, there are 10 plans for this on the district municipality. There are 11 plans developed by the local municipality. We're still talking in recommendations about we need to encourage municipalities to develop and update and review their disaster management plans. It cannot be so, Chairperson. The Minister has said rightfully that scientists have warned us that this is going to be the pattern. Climate change is real. And yet we are talking about things in the air with no deadlines. Municipalities must have these plans in place. They must review it. There must be a date linked to when they must have this done if it's not done already. We cannot operate like this. I want to know where the mayor is in all of this. I want to understand how people are really being assisted. This morning on television, it was sad to see how people look totally distraught, desolate, because they don't know how they are ever going to find their families or their bodies or what is left of them. And that's why I'm saying there is a total disconnect as to what is presented to us in this committee today than what is actually happening on the ground. And I think after all of that has happened now, I think it is now time for us to go as a committee and see for ourselves so that these questions that we are having and that we are getting on a daily basis can be answered and we can see what really is happening on the ground. Thank you, Chairperson.
Where's the channel? Am I disconnected?
I'm also thinking, am I disconnected?
Okay.
I thought Faita Matumba is the new chair.
Where is the whip to take over?
But what happened to the chair?
He's disconnected.
No, I'm back now. Honorable members, can we get to the third speaker? Honorable Matumba, yes.
I don't know. Is my video visible?
Yes, you are visible.
Okay. No, thank you, Chair. It's very much happening to come and sit here and talk about the disaster that we as the community didn't go as if this thing is happening somewhere in America or China. While it's happening right here,
recording in progress,
under our jurisdiction, it can't be. We can't be boardroom politicians when our people need us like this. We need to go and do oversight and talk to our people, so that when departments come here. We can be able to do a thorough oversight and scrutinize their work, because we went to the people. People told us their problem. This is a disaster that happened currently. It's not as if it's something new that we must go and get the mandate from our people on what needs to be done, so that we know when departments come here. We can even ask, what about that road? What about that bridge? What about that thing? Our people need us, and it was not even supposed to be up for discussion. We should have been there long time ago. We know it's an African tradition that when people die, the first thing we do without asking any question, we go and visit families, so that those families can be comforted by our presence. Even when we go, they know help is coming, because those people were here, they saw our situation. That is how it's done in African tradition and custom. We should have went to KZN. We must go to KZN as soon as possible. Chair, this disaster in KZN, we should have been acting because there is precedent. You will remember that in 2019, there were Durban Easter floods, and it was reported that 1,000 people have been displaced, and the MEC of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Nomusa Dube, reported that the number of people who died is 1885. So it gives us so many questions today when there are struggles to address these issues on whether the previously 1,000 displaced really got were catered for. They got new houses. They were placed in new places, because by now we should have been saying people were placed in KZN in this flood, we are going to extend from the fence from the 1,000 displaced previously, we are extending another location, we are giving them a place to stay. We should have been knowing what to do, what not to do, what to do first, because this thing happened in 2019. Now I don't want to go much into the donations. I don't want to go into much into the report, but what I would really want to emphasize on is the victims. We can't do oversight, a boardroom oversight, without going to KZN. We need to go to KZN. That must be the first thing on the table. We need to go to KZN. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks. The following speaker.
No, thank you, Chair. I'll be very, very brief, Chair. Very, very brief. Now, we are seeing the outcome of the deprivation of land through this disaster, in that people historically were pushed to lands that were not productive, to lands that were not sustainable. And this particular disaster should first and foremost demonstrate that people have been pushed to such lands. And secondly, that the government is not taking seriously the question of climate change, because had it been doing that, Chair, we would have seen the instruments that are monitoring instruments that are in place to preempt every other disasters in place. This we have been asking for a very long time now, and it seems like that we, as Honorable Nkalipi put it, that we are just making noise and no action is taken. And Chair, that should be the case. Secondly, Chair, is the question of the presentation just putting poor maintenance, recurring disaster damages, capacity constraints, establishment of humans, settlement in unsafe environment. And I don't think that they have an audacity to come here and tell us about those things, because what they should be speaking to is the exodus of the rural dwellers and the development of the rural dwellers to then abolish the rural distinction between rural and your urban areas. And here we are talking about the infrastructure development within those areas is not the same. We have been saying that in the committee for a very long time, and we're not seeing results. We're going towards the end of term now, and there's nothing that the department seem to be doing in terms of ensuring that abolishment of the town to rural distinction. Instead, we're seeing the continued rural dwellers going through such difficulties, and we're not told the time frames here in the committee for these things that they are mentioning of 10 plans developed in the district, and the stopgap system of the district development plan as those temporal measures that are often taken without a sustainable and clear time frames in terms of ensuring that we are indeed making sustainable and inroads and thinking outside the box in terms of ensuring our communities that they do not face these disasters in the first place. The last one, Chair, is the issue of the instrument, the prior instrument that are put in place to ensure that the department and the province and districts and municipalities preempt all forms of corruption in this sense. We have seen corruption within the COVID-19 reports here in the committee, and it doesn't seem like we have a report that says that we had systems. Well, these are the instruments that will curtail corruption within the donations that are made by different sectors, and I don't know what is the criteria used to report on these things and to ensure that the contributions that have been made are monitored very well and each and every cent is accounted for, Chair, because even my political party contributed here, and there's nothing that is saying about that. And that money, that contribution would not be, that means that contribution would not be accounted for at all. The criteria decides not to include it. And I don't know for what purpose. Then that's it. That's my contribution, Chair. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chava.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if you can allow me to switch my video, as I said, I have a problem of network here. It will disturb me when I'm talking.
No, it's fine.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from the department. And also let me greet all my colleagues and single out the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Mama Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Firstly, sir, let me thank in advance our Minister of COCTA in her team, because we saw her going all over KZN where there is a target. But Chair, in KZN, all of us, we see, even those who didn't go in KZN, there are mountains in KZN. Amagquman namathafa. Where if you are this side, you can't see that side. We cannot say the department didn't do anything. I'm not a spokesperson of the department, but I must say this in front of you. As early in the morning today, there were people who were talking here on TV, talking about to say they didn't get her, and they didn't get disaster management to come to them. But also on TV, we saw many crews of disaster management working on walking inside the rivers river by river and shaking and harassing people and who messed inside the river. And so, Chair, my question to the chair, to the minister and the department, when are they going to reach all these people? Because then there are many. I think the minister can also, because the Department of Quota is the leading department in this issue. She can talk with, his team, other ministers, to even the MECs or MMCs, to go in other side, because it's a big disaster, this disaster. Actually, our minister, we saw our minister addressing many people here and there, talking about this disaster, but that is not enough, minister, because as I said before, when we are this side, and ungale kwentaba ngapha kwentaba uboni nangakhona bayakhala ezisiyabona sonke ukuthi abantu bakhe emagqumeni nemgodini nakho yonke indawo lapha kwaZulu Natal. So kodwa ke engifuna ukusho nje, minister, siyawubona umsebenzi wakho, uyasebenza ongathi akawuboni, kusho ukuthi akanamehlo ke lapho, ngifuna ukuqamba amanga, uyasebenza all over, but iKwaZulu Natal in the way ingakhona. But engifuna ukukubuza nje ukuthi mtaka Dlamini uzofika nini ke kulaba bebela ku TV bethu abalitholi usizo, mhlambe uma usebenzisana nethimba lakho ngeke likwenzeke ukuthi minister ukhulume nethimba lakho ukuthi ke manje yibani isikatati ngale ndlela yokuthi ngoba bayakhala abantu kubukeke ngathi anenzi lutho kanti niyasebenza. Nibe sikatati ni divide ngale ndlela yokuthi manje ngathi seniyahlanya ngoba kuyabona kufanele kuhlanywe manje kunzima. Baye nalaphana ngoba ngathi kwandengezi nge uma ngabe ngingaqamba amanga bengibhekile la TV ngathi kukwandengezi minister na ne department yakho ke nginobheka ke nakhona kwandengezi ukuthi kuhamba kanjani. But iquestion yami nje ukuthi nifika kanjani laba, yini, what is your measures in place minister ukuthi ufinyelele kibo bonke, ngoba kuyabona ukuthi hayi wena fanele usebenze like headless chicken now. Manje angazi ukuthi uzokwenza kanjani ke, kodwa kona kuyabonakala ngoba noma uyasebenza sometimes abanye ababoni ukuthi uyasebenza. Mina ngiyabona ukuthi uyasebenza but kunzima, this thing is very tough. Uhambe intaba wehla amagquma ukhuphuka amagquma namadoda akhathele kade letsho la iTV, manje wena umuntu osifafana. But ke ngibe ngizocela ukuthi thumela ithimba lakho lama disaster, noma mhlambe ucela amanye amadizasa kwamanye amaprovinsi kube kuhlangane nje kuphunywe kuthiwe sa, ngoba ngathi inkinga enkulu iKwaZulu Natal is a danger thing is in KwaZulu Natal. So ke another thing minister, I want to agree with comrade Honorable Mkhalipi that as a committee chair we need to go there also us to give people a hope that the committee is following the minister, is going to see themselves what is happening in KZN as the minister is there. So I agree with all other speakers who spoke after me that we need to go there. Who spoke before me? We need to go there and check even ourselves today. I don't know what are you going to do, Minister Dlamini. In three hospitals, they don't have water. People are crying about to say where they are staying, there is no hygiene. There is a smelling of dirty things. And there are children, they are sick. They will be sick more. I don't know what are we going to do. And are you gonna doing, but I know in your power you can do something. I know that, I definitely should know. I know you. So can't you help this hospital if it's not your department, not your relevant department that must do that thing? Can you talk with other ministers, those who are supposed to help this hospital? People are crying here on TV. And also, Minister, I want to ask, how are you gonna make sure that this money that has been donated by people to help the disaster, how are you gonna make sure that you monitor very close that money? Because sometimes people, they took advantage when they see donors come and donating for helping people, they steal those money. Can't you tell us, Minister, what are you gonna do to monitor this money closely so that each and every cent is going to the people that they need it? Because you see, this thing of our people stealing the poor people's money, it is embarrassing us and even the department itself. Where, remember, there was a PPE. That PPE, it was us as department, as culture, a culture department, and your supervision and ours as a committee looking after these things, that PPE, whatever. But the people, they were stolen money like nothing happened. Like it's not the money that to come and help people do not die. But if they were stolen money, they don't care whether the people are dying or not. My question is that, how are you going? What are you going to do? What are you going to do, Minister, to monitor this money, not closely, not to be stolen now? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mbumza.
Thanks, Chairperson. Am I audible?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Chair, allow me not to click on the video camera. My network is not that, it's not stable as such. Thanks, Chairperson, and greetings to you and colleagues and the minister and deputy ministers. Chair, let's welcome the report. And first and foremost, indicate that we as a committee now have received the report. I think now it is that time has arrived for us as the committee, because I know that we have been yearning to take an oversight visit to KZN and the Eastern Cape. But some among us wanted us to go the first day. And then I was hesitant to say, what are we be doing there? So our oversight will move from an informed position. We must get information first. And on the basis of that information, we're going there to oversight exactly what is that. I understand this feeling that we are Africans, and then therefore we have to arrive as early as possible. That is also correct. It can't be contended. So I think now we, having now received this report, is putting us in a better position now. Perhaps that the committee would have to consider undertaking that oversight into KZN and Eastern Cape. Chair, looking at this presentation, particularly, the minister has indicated that scientific reports are indicating that as a scientist for climate change are indicating that climate change is with us, and that these abnormal floodings, perhaps the contending abnormal floodings and desertifications, are to be with us and will be upon us going into the future. Then it begins then to say that what worried me, Chair, was the slide which was reflecting on the the submission of disaster management plans by municipalities, both the district and local and the metro. And I am concerned because there is a number of municipalities there that have not yet submitted. And it gives us a clear indication then, therefore, that those institutions, if they do not have disaster management plans, it's very clear that disaster risk reduction strategies in those municipalities are absolutely absent. And then therefore, those institutions are not ready to respond to whatever disasters that would be occurring. And to me, in any planning by any institution, risk management is the first priority in terms of saving lives, in terms of saving the infrastructure that we are using as a tool for our own livelihood, whether you talk road, whether you talk pipes, whatever you talk. And we are very aware that the vitality of an economy in any geographic situation would require adequate resilient infrastructure. Now, when you do not have disaster plans, it means there is no constant disaster assessment by that institution, and there is no disaster risk reduction strategy in the event of its own occurrence. So you don't have any preemptive disaster strategies, and that's a worrying factor. And the second chair is that in the report, what concerns me, I may take a distance that might be provided, looking at this humanitarian aid that is flowing in into the case again, you begin to question yourself, where is the center of coordination that receives this particular aid before it is distributed, so that distribution is distributed to the appropriate needy people that have been affected, so that we have that coordination center that would account for any center, so that when we come down as the oversight committee of corporate governance, we will really get into that disaster coordinating center, where we will actually get to be said that this is where it happened, so that when we begin now to move around KZN, we move with clear, accurate information from that center, having received this one. I hope that is holding, so that the disaster that is pulled all over the country or even outside is actually reaching its destination. Chair, my last around this matter, having welcomed this report, is that perhaps we going forward, because disasters have been happening in this country, and it's not the first time this one is. That it has developed into a huge calamity. Disasters have been hitting KZN, particularly Teguin and other surrounding areas, as well as in the Eastern Cape and all in the country. I think here we need to focus at building the agility to reduce vulnerability. In essence, if we go around, because the first point, what do I mean by that? One, if you look at this thing tells us that we do not have, as a Teguini Metro, a very adequate spatial planning that is reinforced by clear bylaws that people would not, in terms of your zoning schemes, people would not actually, there is a provision in law, I don't understand, wherever a settlement is going to be put,
You first need a record of decision. There's an environmental assessment. Whether is this particular geographic area, is it actually habitable for human beings? But now you fail to understand why we would have our own people being allowed. Because the people who are affected the most here are the most vulnerable. And why, as government, at this level and at that particular level, do we allow people to establish themselves along the banks of the rivers, along floodplains, on steepy, slopy mountains, that when it's raining, there are floods, that water would be galloping down those rivers? Why those mountains? Why do we allow such settlements? Then this speaks to a special plan that does not exist. If it exists, it's just malicious compliance, because these matters would not happen. Now, going forward, it would be important, the lesson that we have learned now from this calamity in KZN is telling us that we need to develop the agility to reduce vulnerability in communities in whatever form, so that the human settlement must begin to be looking at these matters seriously, as well as the metros and the municipalities, in actually establishing houses. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Simon.
Thank you, Chair. firstly, let me start by greeting the Honorable Minister Umama Unkosazana Dlamini Zuma, Baba U Deputy Minister Obed Babela, and other members, honorable members of this committee, and of course our officials from department. Ngizoqala ngokuthi ngithi ngicabanga ukuthi kubalulekile ukuthi sizwelane nabantu bakithi KwaZulu Natal nabase Eastern Cape during lesi sikhathi sobuhlungu obungaka. Sithi engathi uMvelinqangi engaba nabo ngalesi sikhathi bakwazi ukuthi babuyele esimeni, impilo ibuyele esimeni ukuya phambili. My contribution will start by saying I want to agree with a lot of honorable members that have spoken before when they say we were supposed to do better as the department. And I think we can still be able to do better. Originally, I'm from KZN, but of course, I am more in Gauteng. Today in the morning, I received a call from Mawuti. Abakhala ngokuthi abanye babakazi balibone official elizobabuza ukuthi usizo abangalithola lungaba usizo lana. Now, Minister, those are disturbing news, and I agree with my colleagues when they say you might have done, and I appreciate what you have done so far as the minister. I mean, you could do, that's how far you could be able to go, or there is more that we can still be able to do. But I think you also need more hands, you need more people on the ground to be able to detect this, because reality is, it is disturbing that there are people that are saying they have not met any official that will come and ask how can they be assisted. So I'm saying it is important that one, maybe we go down, because when we want or when we need these people to vote for us, we go to their houses, door to door, we go to them. And at the point when they have problems such as this, we should be able to be seen in those houses where we were requesting votes from. Because it can't be that when you want a vote from me, you come to my house. But when I'm in problems, you don't come to my house. You only send me. So I'm saying we need more hands. So we need to try and make sure that we go on the ground. These reports, including the interview that we saw on the television in the morning, saying people saying they did not receive any land. It makes us questions more as to say how many of these people are outstanding, which can, you know, because it can only be few that can come in and say we have not received any help. And the question will be how many of those would have not received help. The last thing that I want us to that I want to see is that maybe we need to try and put not necessarily everything on stop, but try and put more focus in KZN on the people that have been affected by this disaster by crafting a comprehensive plan as a department that will say, of course, maybe gives a number of how many people have managed to get assistance, so that we can then be able to track whether we're lacking or there's a number of people that did, that have not received assistance. Because it is clear that we need to answer on some of these questions that are randomly asked to say, look, there are these people that... So we need to compare that, because I can also understand that, you know, people can become very technical when it comes to these things. What is reported here vis-a-vis what is currently happening on the ground. So you will end up not knowing who is honest, who is not. But at this point in time, I'm saying, let's try and prioritize a plan that will seek to reach almost all of those people or our people that have been affected by this disaster, in order to make sure that we get rid of this situation, or we try as much as possible to assist on this situation. And then after that, we can be able to then say, now we can then go back to our normal life as the government, because this is an urgent matter that cannot be able to wait. Our people need us on the ground. We've got to make sure that we're with them on the ground. So most of the things that I would have wanted to raise, our colleagues have raised them. And I think for now, it is safe to say, I want to submit from here. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Hadebe.
Thank you so much, Honorable the Chair. Greetings to the Minister Umama Udlamini Zuma. Greetings to the two deputy ministers and all protocol observed. Chair, I also want to welcome the report and express my sincere condolences to the people of KZN who lost their loved ones, including those that were left displaced as a result of these floods. And also not forgetting the people of Eastern Cape and Western Cape, Kwalanga in particular. Secondly, Chair, I want to also express our appreciation and gratitude to the Cabinet and our Minister, Umama Udlamini Zuma, for their prompt response in attending to the disaster. We really thank you. Your actions did not go unnoticed. Keep up the good work. I also want to align myself, Chair, with all the previous speakers who proposed that we conduct an oversight visit. Now that we have received the report and it's at our disposal and understand some of the details and content and the extent of the disaster, it is high time that we study the report thoroughly. So that when we go to this oversight, we'll be able to compare what's on paper and what's on the ground. So one would want to propose that we move with speed to conclude all the logistics and the details surrounding the oversight visit. Even though, Chair, we welcome the ad hoc committee that has been established by Parliament, but Copter Portfolio Committee has a leading role to play in this disaster, in ensuring that we provide direction and the necessary support required. So I wouldn't spend much of your time, Chair. Thank you so much for the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, we will now allow the department to... I thought your hands...
Honorable,
I see your hands, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, Chair.
Yeah, I'm very sorry, Chairperson. I forgot to ask a specific question to the department on the presentation regards to SASSA grants. Now, those grants are very welcome as a sort of intervention to our families who have lost their lost everything in terms of this disaster. But I wanted to check with the specifics, Chair. We still have missing people. So how do you intervene as in terms of those SASSA grants to those families who have lost hope that they are going to find their families, who have opened cases with police, but now they don't know if those family members will be found alive or not? I know very well that we can't declare those people dead until it has been declared officially. But I think that the minister maybe might know that maybe is any arrangement in terms of intervention from SASSA to sympathize with those families in terms of the grants. Thank you. The last one, Chair, I don't know on the slides when we were recognizing people who have assisted. EFF have assisted as well. So why the EFF is not on the part of those lists? Thank you much. Thank you very much, Chair.
Oh, noted. Okay. Now, like I'm saying, I see the other hands. I assume they are the old ones. Can we allow a minister, and the minister has asked to be excused by 1 o'clock. I know as well that some of us are part of the discussion of the Systems Amendment Act. So we are slightly under pressure as well. Can we allow the department led by the minister to comment, respond to some of the issues raised?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the honorable members. I'll just ask the team to respond, and I'll respond last. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Minister and Honourable Members. Yes, I think the department is taking note of all the concerns that are raised, and we will definitely make an effort to engage with the Provincial Disaster Management Centre, specifically on the list that were mentioned. To identify those people that have not yet been assisted, and the Department of Social Development is also one of the key departments that we will follow up with regards to the SASSA grants and the particular areas that are still identified as gaps. In response to the latest question also with regards to the missing persons, that is something that we will have to find out how they will be able to deal with it if there is a specific time frame. And that will be, also led by the Department of Social Development as they are the custodians of the grants. And to get the information from the security cluster in terms of the missing persons and how it is being dealt with. So we will definitely follow up on those issues. I think we will also welcome the visit of the portfolio committee to the areas. And we will propose that, the sector departments that are also leading the task teams accompany, the committee on those oversight visits so that we can also ensure that the specific questions can be addressed by the relevant departments. So I think with regards to the hospitals, we will engage with the Department of Water and Sanitation and also the municipality to also determine if there are any you know, interventions that we can fast track and report on that as soon as possible. So I think apart from that, I think many of the comments were, you know, general comments and concerns, and we have taken note of that. We are having a meeting with the Extended National Joint Flood Committee on Thursday. We will also raise these matters and make sure that that we receive the feedback in terms of the actions and the interventions. Thank you.
Thank you. Before the minister, I think there's some explanation as well that we ought to give as a committee. I think we all agree the situation in KZN demanded that we should all be there. But I think it is proper now that we'll know what we must go there to do. I think the dilemma of government itself has got a face, and that face becomes the executive, led by the president and the cabinet, and we oversight that. But the question of when should we have been there, I think we have noted the concerns, and I think we will have to adjust our program and make sure that we are there with some understanding now as to what is going on. I thought I should say that so that it does not only look like, Minister, you are the one who caused us not to be there. That's also the understanding that we don't want to create a stampede when there's a problem. We want to deal with the problem and deal with it properly. So I thought I should say that before I allow you, Minister.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Mr. Vimba, just respond quickly, then I'll come in.
Okay. Somebody wants to come. Okay.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Good morning, Minister and honorable members. I thought, let me just add, in terms of government interventions, which I think is critical for this committee to note, that about 147 engineers, Chairperson, were deployed to assist in KZN from MESA, SANDF, and other provinces as well, Chairperson. MESA alone, we deployed 16 professional engineers who are still working in KZN, who were assisting with assessments, looking at other districts as well beyond Etebini. And MESA, together with Public Works and Infrastructure through ISA, we are leading the infrastructure intervention stream in responding to the interventions in KZN. So I thought, let me just raise that because it was not really stated. So to say, over and above the 18 engineers that Water and Sanitation deployed, other agencies and government and provinces also supported. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks.
Very much to all the members of the Portfolio Committee. Have raised issues. Let me just first say thank you very much, but can I request that all members who have information about people who are not being helped, can they send us? Because, you know, members of the public, if they find something, some of them call us and we respond and we get the province or the municipality or even ourselves to intervene. So I'm requesting that in this kind of situation,
if you find somebody who says they need help, they've not been helped, of whatever nature, please let us know. And then you can then raise it in the portfolio committee. But for now, in after this, can we get those so that we can at least assist those people? But let me also clarify, you know, there are people who are in shelters in the halls. And in fact, there's a team that, there's a group I'm told that's refusing to leave the school. Because initially, when this happened, it was so urgent that people are moved from the flood plains and so on, and that some of them were put in schools as an emergency. And then after that, they had to be removed to other various places because the schools also had to open. So there are still problems, because I know that I was informed this morning that there are those who are refusing to move from the school, which is unfair because the kids should be in school, and they've been found alternate places. But let me say, those who are in shelters, it's easy to account for them because you know they are there, you know they need blankets, mattresses, food and medicine, and you need to take SASSA there, Home Affairs there, and so on. The difficulty comes with those who did not go to the shelters, but sometimes who are with relatives somewhere or neighbors somewhere. Those ones become difficult sometimes to trace because some are traceable because the counselors have recorded them and said, these ones are with their neighbors. But if you are like me, you come and you ask, and the counselor or people on the ground are not able to tell you that there are people who are in this house who are staying with the neighbors and so on. So we would appreciate information like that. But those who are in shelters are being taken care of as much as it is possible. And I would like the details of that place, that I think it was Honorable Mkalipe that said there is food, but the person who's supposed to cook for them has locked it up. So if I can get that information so we could try and do something about that, I'll talk to the province or the municipality, even if they have to change that person to get somebody else who can cook for the people, because the food is there for them to eat. So I appreciate that you are raising these issues so that they can be resolved, because some of them, it may really be that we don't know that somebody is locking the food and not allowing people to eat. I also want to say that on the issue of search and rescue, initially there was quite a big contingency of search and rescue teams, not because they are there in KZN, but because other provinces had sent teams to go and assist. Because I think we must also acknowledge that we haven't trained enough search and rescuers, because maybe we haven't had a disaster of this magnitude. And it's a lesson. I was talking to the Minister of Police that it's important that from now on we train as many of the search and rescue teams so that hopefully we won't have this kind of disaster again. But should it happen, we should be able to assist. So that we would acknowledge. But there are still four teams that are still in the province, that are working in the province, who are still searching and trying to find the missing people. On Saturday alone,
Saturday, I was on the ground. There were actually, the minister informed me that there were actually seven bodies that were found. So that work is continuing. It's difficult because sometimes the person, umugala, they are washed away from here, but maybe their body is washed away and it's maybe kilometers and kilometers away. So that's a challenge, but that work is still going on. There are still 60 unidentified bodies between mortuary and Phoenix mortuary. 60 have not been identified. So we're not sure who the relatives are. Maybe some of them may be foreign nationals, we don't know, but they asked who have been found, who are in mortuaries, but have not been identified by relatives. I also want to say on the issue of water, yes, initially there was a huge problem of water in Eteguini, not only in the townships, but even in the suburbs, everywhere. And as a result, a lot of water tankers were sent there. There are, as we speak now, 188 water tankers in Durban. There are 100 wards in Durban, but there are 188 water tankers. They should be almost be able to service people because there are some in some places where water has been restored. The deputy mayor, who is also in charge of this work during this disaster, is saying that they act on demand where people say that they still don't have water, and that's where they send water tankers. But from where we sit, and I'm going to talk to them again, and if members of the portfolio committee know specific areas where water is not reaching, please let me know after this meeting. You can SMS me. I will talk to them. Because in terms of water tankers, there are enough water tankers to service the people. On the issue of corruption, I think all of us do not want corruption to happen, especially with this disaster. I mean, really. Corruption is just something that erodes trust between the and the people. That is why the President and Parliament did say that there is a team that's being put to develop together with Treasury and mechanisms to ensure, and the AG, to ensure that the AG can actually have line of sight of the transactions as they happen, rather than come after the fact and say this transaction was done wrongly long after it has happened. So there is a lot of effort put to try and make sure that the money is used for what it's meant for the people that are supposed to receive it. I must say, I'm not sure why the EFF contribution is not being mentioned. I don't know where it was sent. I'm hearing for the first time. I'm not sure where it was sent, but clearly, if there was a contribution from EFF, it should be reflected. But as I say, I was hearing it for the first time. I was not aware of it. some of the contributions get sent directly to the provinces, some get sent directly from the to the municipalities. And you also recall that it was only declared as a national disaster later. For the first week or so, it was only a provincial disaster. Some of the comments were just taking it out. I will not necessarily respond to. In terms of the missing people, I think I've explained that there are still teams that are still trying to find the missing people, including using helicopters to get to places where it's difficult to get to by car and so on. So that work is still continuing. It's difficult, but it's still continuing. As far as I know about the SASSA grants, the people who are in shelters, for instance, will not necessarily receive the grants whilst they are in shelters. They will get those grants when they leave the shelters, because in the shelters, they are still taken care of. That's what I understood from the SASSA people, from the Department of Social Development. It's a difficult one, Honorable Mkhalipi, when the person has not been found and not declared dead yet. But those people are being helped when they need help. It's not only help because if they need shelter, if they need food and whatever, they are being helped. But insofar as getting the help to bury and to, then that one is still obviously waiting for the people to be found. It's a very painful situation when you can't find your loved one, even if you know that they may not be alive, but it's always better to have closure when you can see where you can lay them with dignity. So it's a painful situation, but as I say, the rescue teams are still doing their best to find the people. And I hope that those unidentified ones can also be identified. I think maybe we should also communicate that it doesn't matter if somebody passed away in Mlazi or was washed away in Mlazi. The body might be in Park Green because the mortuaries near Mlazi may be full. So relatives should just search everywhere. Because there are three main mortuaries that have been used for the flood victims, one in Pine Town, one in Phoenix, and the one in Park Green. I also want to thank the other issues that have been raised, I think, need a proper discussion about, and we acknowledge them. That's why they are in the report that some of the municipalities have not sent us their disaster risk plans and so on. So I think those ones that and issues around climate change and how we're going to be, and that's why initially I said when we build back, when people are sent back, they can't be sent to the same places where their homes were washed away. We have to find land where it's safe to build. And also even in those mountains, which are not necessarily river banks, but they are mountains where the mudslides washed away, pushed away the homes. Even those people eventually, in our view, they should be removed from there, even those homes that were not washed away. Land must be found so that they are removed there, because if there is a big rain again, big rains again, the same thing might happen. So how long are people going to be in shelters? The human settlement has started doing the temporary homes, but also they give shelters to those whose homes need to be repaired so that they can get material to repair their homes. And I hear, and I think we should also inform, if Honorable Mkadipi could also send me all the details of those areas where people are being asked to, who are given vouchers, but are being asked to go to places where they've got to take 2 days or even far, even if it's 1 taxi, if it's far, so that we can inform the people who are giving vouchers
Honorable Mpumza, please unmute yourself.
Thank you very much. So I think if we could help one another, if you can give us that information, because we can't deal with things sitting in Pretoria, so we need to inform the people on the ground, because maybe the people who made those arrangements were not aware where the people are coming from. I don't know. So we need to correct those things. So I would really appreciate if Honorable Mkalipe could send us an email with all those things so that we attend to them, because it's helpful to know about them. On the issue of the Buthelezi family, I also know that the Premier did commit that they were going to attend to that family. But it looks like something didn't go right. I'm told that their family used their private undertakers. Because the undertaker that the province had allocated is Cebo Letu, but they say that they will reimburse the family. But it looks like at the point of the funeral happening, there was not proper communication with the family. I must admit that. That's the response I got from the Premier. And so they are going to be discussing how to reimburse the family. In the interest of time, Chair, let me also thank the comrades that have acknowledged that even though we can't be perfect in this situation, that have acknowledged that at least we've done some work. We appreciate that. A lot. In fact, if we had our way, we would be completely stationed, we would be permanently stationed in KZN, but because we have other responsibilities, we still have to undertake those responsibilities. So it's not easy to be there all the time, but we appreciate the comments and the discussions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. That's my response in the interest of time. Thank you.
Yes, honorable members, I see Honorable Mkalipi, but as your hand is going up, it's normal that we have follow-ups. There's serious pressure in terms of time. I'm pleading with members, but we'll allow Honorable Mkalipi. Honorable Mkalipi.
Thanks, Chair. No, I just want to say thanks to the Minister. The Secretary of the Portfolio Committee must give me the number for the Minister because I don't have. And thanks very much, Minister, for availing yourself to be contacted in terms of this disaster. And the only thing that I want to know from the Minister is that please make a follow-up in terms of those people who are housed in Amawuti Community Hall, because there's an NPO that was the task to do the cooking for those people there. But the NPO in question makes people to go hungry while the food is provided by the disaster management. That is the only point that I want to stress to the Minister. The other thing, I'll just liaise with the Minister direct, as she said that I must send SMS to him, to her. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Chair, if my number is
083-448-4879. Okay. 448-4879.
Oh, okay.
No, it's appearing on my screen. It's here.
Thank you. Yes, you have it. Okay.
No, it's fine. Thank you very much. I'm sure, as already indicated, the urgency of the matter has been noted. And I'm sure out of this information, we will be able to undertake oversight visit to KZN. Now we are on the last item, briefing on 2022-23 annual performance plans by DCOG, MINSA and DTA. The original plan was that each presentation would take 10 minutes. If possible, we can cut it to 7, I would be very pleased. We did receive the documents. Can I again hand over to you, Minister? It's our annual performance plans, as already indicated.
And thank you very much. In the interest of time, let me just ask DCOG to start. DG, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Minister, and thanks to the Chair and all honourable members. If I could just ask for the presentation to please be flighted. So thank you so much, Honourable Chair. We are here to provide DCOG's annual performance plan for 2022-23 and also to talk about our budget allocation. If we could go to the next slide, please. And of course, we will also be looking at some recommendations that we will be making through to the portfolio committee. If we could go to the next slide, please. In interest of time, I'll just skip this one. Next slide, please. So the department has revised its strategic plan for 2019 to 2024, just to ensure that we've aligned ourselves to the department's mandate. As a result of this, we've had to also then review our institutional operating model together with the way we are actually structured so that we are more in line with the requirements of the district development model and to be able to then really provide the support that we are required to do to province and just to local government. So the review of the strat plan was also informed by the MTSF. And we also then included in our plans or made the adjustments so that we've included COVID-19 and also the unrest that has took place in Gauteng. And of course, now also looking at the floods, we would also then have to see how it is that we can just enhance our coordination through the DDM structures. So So the annual performance plan was submitted in March this year for tabling to Parliament. And of course, we've also then tabled that as an annexure to Parliament. Can we then go to the next slide, please? So in revising our strategy, we've had to review our vision. And I think what I would like to just highlight about our vision now is that we've also included the fact that we want to have communities that are not only connected, but they're also climate smart. So we'll be looking more closely at interventions to assist communities going forward. As you can see, we've also reviewed our values, and in that, we've built in the servant leadership and a more hands-on approach in terms of what we're required to do. If we could move to the next slide, please. So we've also then revised our priorities and our focus areas, specifically making certain that we have not only just outcomes, but also impact in terms of what it is that we are required to do going forward. So we've had to really look at our whole policy universe, because we know that this is also enabled by our whole IGR process, because we want to ensure that we have that joint planning, monitoring and support, and all the interventions that we'd like to focus on, and making certain that we have the levers to actually activate the policies more appropriately and more adequately, just to also ensure that through our whole cooperative governance approach, that as government and non-government actors, and including communities, that we all then move in tandem, and specifically, you know, through the DDM approach, that being all of society, all of government, really coming together for us to be able to then reach our intended outcomes. If we can then move to the next slide. So we've also then looked at the 7 priorities of government, and we've then aligned our strategic outcomes to the 7 priorities, the ones that really then have an impact on the work that we do are the a capable, ethical and developmental state, economic transformation and job creation, also just the spatial integration, human settlement and local government, and of course, social cohesion and safe communities for all. So we've had to then revise our stress plan, where we've now placed more emphasis on these, and in particular, just looking at how it is that in the spirit of the IGR, we then realize the intended outcomes. And these, okay, let's move to the next slide to save time. If we could move to the next one as well. Slide 9, please. So for this actual year, we have 30 targets or indicators in total, and you can see that local government support and interventions is sitting with most of them at 11. So I'll take you through each of these as quickly as possible. If we can move to the next slide, please. So the first one is just to do with our annual financial statements. Of course, we're still waiting for the outcome of this audit. It's currently in progress at the moment, so we will know the outcome in July. And we are hoping for the unqualified audit opinion. If we then move to the corporate services, we have what we call our corporate services improvement plan. We also have our financial management improvement plan. And within each of these plans, we've specifically looked at some of our strategies to include our information technology strategy, where in future we want to focus more on digitization. But not only that, we also have our human resources plan in there, and also under, from a financial perspective, a lot more emphasis or focus on supply chain management and also just on our post-audit action planning. Going forward, we also want to make certain that all corruption cases that are then reported are properly investigated and resolved. And just in terms of our whole policy toolkit, we believe that this area, because it's so aligned to legislation and our mandate, that we want to make certain that at a glance if there's anything that is really needed from a policy perspective, that anyone can reference that and also begin to operationalize more practically. If we can move to the next slide, please. So this is the local government support and interventions management program. The emphasis here is to do with DDM. And of course, what really becomes important is that we want to then realize our DDM and make sure that we have in place all the institutional arrangements. So here we talk about our IGR framework. We also then talk about our integrated monitoring framework. We also talk about the one plan, and we also speak about the economic recovery plan. And what then becomes important here is how it is that we have the mega expenditure to actually then be able to support us when it comes to the implementation of infrastructure. So if we move to the next slide, slide 12. We have also realized that we cannot have hubs necessarily in all 52 spaces as we had initially planned. So what we are looking at now is rather hubs across regions. So we've had to revise our plan for it to become more affordable, and it will also then allow for much more participation within sector departments and also within bringing in the private sector. So here we also then reference our three smart cities that we've already identified. And of course, we are putting plans in place to make sure that we redesign and refurbish these towns. We also, within this plan, have our coastal city. It is along the four district areas between the Eastern Cape and KZN. And of course, we are in progress here in terms of what it is that we are required to do. We've also looking at the Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Intervention Bill. And our plan is to ensure that the bill is then submitted to Parliament by the 31st of March 2023. And the Municipal Support and Intervention Plan, these have in essence already been developed to actually support the 64 dysfunctional municipalities. What we need to ensure this year is the acceleration of its implementation. If we can go to the next slide, please. So in professionalizing local government, the institutional development branch really has been focusing specifically on capacity building. So in our targets here, you will see that we talk about the integrated local government capacity building strategy. We also talk about reports that we need to actually look at to ensure that we have responsible citizenry. And we intend to then ensure that we have these 18 district stakeholder engagements just to make our communities much more aware. And we're also driving active citizenry and leadership. And we're going to be looking at this through our GovChat social media platform across all nine provinces. Just in terms of the effective community engagement structures and systems and processes, there will be a lot more focus and emphasis on ensuring that there are functional ward committees, just so that we can properly capacitate municipalities to be able to maintain their functional ward committees. Just with regards to the Municipal Public Accounts Committees or the MPACs, we're looking at four MPACs, and their functionality assessment reports will be conducted during this year. We're also looking at how it is that we also support the improved audit outcomes. And here the report on the implementation of actions to actually address issues that have been raised by the AG will also be looked at as per section 134 of the MFMA. And we would like to actually then include this in our State of Local Government report that is due in December this year. If we could then move to the next slide, please. So on the disaster management program, we've actually just been talking about that quite extensively earlier. We need to make sure that we capacitate all organs of state so that disaster funding arrangements are then adequately not only addressed but coordinated, and that we specifically also make sure that disaster funds are released quite urgently so that as the disasters actually do occur, that we are in a better position to activate and deal with these. So here we are looking at the actual disaster funding arrangements itself and also the National Disaster Management Framework and how it is that we need to make certain that we actually support the implementation of disaster funding, but also the implementation of the disaster management plan. And then also just making certain that the National Disaster Management Framework is also then approved by the 31st of March 2023. If we can then move to our next slide. We will also continue with our remodeled CWP program. We have revised the model and we therefore anticipate an increase, firstly, in the number of participants who will be given work opportunities. But we also, by the same token, have reviewed the actual stipends that we are providing to CWP participants. And as such, we have therefore also looked at increasing these. However, from a target perspective, we just thought we will keep it at 250,000 people participating on the program and then ensuring that 25,000 participants are also trained specifically around useful work, so that when they exit the program, that they would then have the necessary skills and would be able to then either start their own businesses or participate in cooperatives once they have been provided with the skills from the program. If we could then move to the next slide, please. If we could then skip this one. So this slide here actually depicts how money actually filters through from the actual department through our various programs. So we have five various programs, and if you look at this, what really becomes important is that the funds are being split between compensation of employment, goods and services, and capital. And we also then make certain that all the funds are then aligned back to the annual performance plan and the operational plan and the procurement plan, so that we are able to then make certain that we are then spending the funds so that there can be an impact back to service delivery. If we can then move on to the next slide, please. So in the slide, this is the estimates of national expenditure, and we've broken this down. But what the portfolio committee needs to note is that the department has been allocated just over 111 billion. Of this 111 billion, we have earmarked funds, and these earmarked funds are really monies that are being transferred through to the municipalities and to entities. And what you will see is that the bigger portion is actually then allocated to the local government equitable share, followed by our municipal infrastructure grant, and then also the CWP. So earmarked funds make up just over 110 billion. If you actually look at our operations, what happens here is that all programs are then provided with specific amounts of funds, and you can see that our local government support intervention and also the community work program is where most of the operating budget actually is split. And I think the more important point to note here is our economic classification, where compensation of employment is also then, let me call it, we have funds of 353 million and then goods and services just over 558 million. If we can then go to the next slide, please. So with regards to the actual budget allocation, I think this slide is very similar to what we've seen in the prior slide. As what then really becomes important here is that we are able to then demonstrate whether we are able to make the impact that we require to make based on how it is that we have then allocated the funds per each of the programs, per compensation of employment, and also looking at goods and services. And specifically, if you look at the department, we just have 294 million just over for us to actually run our operations. And you can see quite a big chunk of that is going to the community works program, as I had also indicated earlier. If we could move to the next slide, please. So we want to then just recommend to the portfolio committee our annual performance plan and the budget that has been allocated for 2022-23. And thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Misa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Saik, if you can also share the Misa's presentation, please. Are you winning, Mr. Saik or Mr. Matata, if you can say?
Why is it not happening? No? Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. This is our presentation of our APP for 2022-2023 term. In the interest of time, I will try and move with speed. Can you move, Mr. Sykes, to the purpose of the presentation, please? Jump the slide, move straight to the purpose. The purpose is to brief the committee on our APP for 2023. And next slide. In the main, say, we want to confirm that we did table our APP in Parliament on the 11th of March, 2022. It contains 33 outputs and 33 output indicators, and will also provide summary of our financial resources. Next slide. This is our mission, vision, and values. I'm not going to spend time on this one. Can we move? They have not changed. Next slide. Also, our mandate has not changed, but to indicates that we did review our operational notice and added an additional responsibility around spatial planning. As you will see, as we move in this APP, we've got a new indicator that talks to the coordination of the implementation of the Eastern Seaboard development, which has been assigned to MISA. Next slide. These are seven MTSF priorities, and MISA in the main, our APP responds to priority 1, 4, and 6 directly. And of course, we do contribute to others as well. Next slide. I've already spoken to the number of our outputs and output indicators. They are distributed as the program indicated that administration has 6 outputs, 18 outputs for technical support services, which is our main core business program, and 9 for infrastructure delivery management support outputs, and 11 output indicators. Next slide. This is our program one administration. I won't go through this slide, but it does indicate the sub-programs under administration. Next slide. Also, I won't dwell much on this one, just to indicate that we have got a number of strategies and plans that we'll be implementing as part of the administration. Next slide. Of course, key to this, we want to maintain our unqualified audit opinion on our annual financial statements, the plan that we want to ensure that we maintain. Next slide. This is a budget allocation for program 1, 36 million. You will see that 47 million goes for commercial employees and goods and services, 8 million. Then I won't go through the outer years in terms of the distribution allocation for the outer years. In total, we have 106 million for this current financial year. Next slide. This is our main core program, where almost 70% of our budget is allocated. And this is program 2. With sub-programs, infrastructure assessment and analysis, infrastructure environment maintenance, and stakeholder coordination, as well as technical skills. Next slide. In terms of our plans for this year, we have been assisting municipalities with the development of water conservation and water demand management strategies. And our plan now is to assist the implementation of those plans, and we have a target of 20. And also we have presented to this committee before about the challenge of misalignment of bulk and recirculation in about 18 water service authorities, and we started some feasibility studies before to address that misalignment. So we have a target of 5 water service authorities that will be supported in addressing those misalignments of bulk and recirculation projects. Of course, there are projects that have been identified from the feasibility studies that we assisted municipalities to develop. And also, we reported previously that we allocated about 50 million to assist with the mainstreaming of labor-intensive construction methods as part of the implementation of presidential employment stimulus. So we have 25 municipalities that we are supporting with the mainstreaming of labor-intensive construction methods. Next slide. And another challenge, which we all know, the challenge of asset management in our country, which is a huge challenge. Recently, TWS released a Green Drop report, which shows a serious state of our municipal assets. Through our lobbying, we're able to ensure that MIG makes provision for at least 15% towards asset planning and implementation of operation and maintenance plans. So we are going to support those municipalities to implement that set aside of 15%, 10% for O&M implementation, and 5% that talks to asset planning. So we have got 15 municipalities that we will be supporting to implement. And also we have a program to support all 44 districts which are MIG receiving to improve the performance of MIG, not only in terms of expenditure, but in terms of the quality of outcomes. What we have done here, we have procured engineering software packages to assist us to appraise designs from consultants, and ensure that municipalities, consultants don't over design infrastructure. So we'll be working to assist, which will go a long way in ensuring that municipalities they deliver a quality infrastructure, but also they are not taken for the ride by consultants. Next slide. We also have a plan of implementing a young graduate program. About 150 young graduates which should be recruited and enrolled in the MESA Young Graduate Program. And we also have a program as part of building a technical capacity for local government of awarding bursaries to students. We are starting towards technical qualifications. We have a plan of 100 students that will be awarded bursaries by MESA towards technical qualifications. And also for the program of capacitating municipal officials through a number of training in municipal infrastructure program, where 500 municipal officials have been prioritized in the current financial year. And also we've got about 100 municipal officials with experience, but it's not have a formal qualification, but we have got experience to enrolling them into our recognition of prior learning programs. Next slide. And also supporting municipalities purposes with the implementation of integrated infrastructure plans through the district development model, and also with spatial planning and ensure that they comply with PLUMA. So we have 30 municipalities that will be supported with that. Next slide. This slide also talks to the support around other services like your integrated waste management, which you are supporting about 25 municipalities, electricity, we have 15 municipalities. And we'll also do a capacity assessment of 10 districts, which are in terms of their technical capacity, and come up with interventions. Next slide. We also have a plan of partnerships with professional bodies as well as universities as part of building capacity for research and development in municipalities. And also we have planned to support one province with infrastructure master plan. Here we are following what KZN did. They did quite a comprehensive assessment of their state of infrastructure in KZN. And following that, they did a water master plan for KZN. So this time around, we are working with Eastern Cape to have a similar kind of work in the Eastern Cape, where we'll have a master plan for the province in terms of the infrastructure. This is a budget person for this program. As I've indicated, like our core program, and the allocation to the tune of 21 million has been allocated to this program. Next slide. This is our second core program, program three. Next slide. In terms of this program, say we are working with National Treasurer to implement the infrastructure delivery management system. It is a system that Treasurer developed, as well as what is called framework for infrastructure delivery and procurement management system. So we are working with Treasurer to ensure that we assist municipalities to implement these two initiatives. And we have a plan of 10 municipalities for the IDMS and 20 municipalities for the framework for infrastructure delivery and procurement management system. Next slide. And also we have a plan of completing our annual report on the state of municipal functionality for infrastructure delivery. We will have one report that talks to the state of municipal functionality as it relates to municipal infrastructure, which will be quite detailed. And also have a partnership that we have initiated with strategic partnership with other entities, like your private sector and non-governmental organizations. We want to continue those partnerships and ensure that the private sector participate in the municipal programs, including funding. So we have 10 partnerships that municipalities that will be supported with those. Also, I spoke earlier about the Eastern Seaport development. MISA has been assigned the responsibility to coordinate the implementation of the Eastern Seaport development, the coastal city plan that DG spoke about, to our coordination that work. And we plan to have one coastal city master plan by March 2023. Next slide. And we're also working with National Treasurer as well as the department to assist municipalities with implementation of long-term infrastructure investment plans. We have 7 municipalities that are targeted this financial year. And also assisting municipalities to access alternative and innovative funding mechanisms for infrastructure development of 7 municipalities. Also, municipalities supported to prepare and package a bankable project. We have 7 municipalities that are earmarked this financial year. Next slide. The budget for this program is 21 million. Next slide. This is just the overall resource consideration for MISA. In total, you will see that our allocation has not been really growing. And currently our budget is 350 million, and we are planning to increase this to 361 million in the next financial year, and 367 million in the outer year 2024-2025. This is our last slide. We recommend that the committee note the MISA APP for 2022-2023. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can we move to Department of Traditional Affairs?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and honorable members of the committee, the Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, and colleagues in the meeting. If I could ask that I be assisted with the presentation to be loaded on the screen. And whilst it's being loaded, perhaps just to start off with some introductory remarks that in the presentation, Chairperson, what we'll be doing in terms of the outline, if we could just go to the next slide there to indicate the presentation outline, that some introductory remarks, then specific focus on the targets for the 2022-2023 financial year, and a presentation on the allocations for the department as well. On the next slide, we just indicate, we'll not be spending a lot of time on that, the work that we are presenting is organized around the key outcomes relating to ensuring that there is effective governance in the department, that we promote safe initiation practices, that we support functional institutional traditional and coastal leadership, that we support the involvement of the institutional traditional leadership in development partnerships, and that we also promote the transformation of the institution. That's really what how the information is organized. And in this presentation, we then indicate into the committee what the specific deliverables will be for the financial year 2022-2023. If we can then just go to the next slide, that starts with the program one, which is administration. In administration, we will continue with the areas that we have targeted before on ensuring achievement of targets within what we call an organizational performance information compliance management plan, which deals with key compliance issues relating to HR, for example, which relates to matters relating to the submission of reports or performance reports. All those targets, we've captured them within the plan, and we'll continue with that together with the one that relates to financial management, the payment of suppliers within 30 days. All of those are packaged within that that compliance plan that we'll continue to work towards achieving. And then on the next slide, we just indicate that we've also now included this work that relates to the review of our internal policies to make sure that they promote the mainstreaming of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. So we'll be identifying a particular policy, set of policies, policy per annum, reviewing it. If there are gaps, address those gaps and make sure that we close them going forward. We've also included the two aspects there, Honorable Chair, that relates to our responsibility in terms of the sector as a whole, that there are specific indicators that we've agreed to with the sector around gender-based violence and femicide interventions within the sector as a whole, and that we'll be coordinating a reporting process whose reports then will also be submitted to the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation and the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. And then also just our own procurement targets there when it comes to women, youth and persons with disabilities. That then takes us to the first line function, which is research policy and legislation. Just to emphasize here as we go into this one that the two pieces of legislation that have been enacted, Traditional and Quiescent Leadership Act and the Customary Initiation Act, that really are the guiding tools that we'll be using as we focus on implementation during this medium-term period. And we will continue with the work that we do where we annually identify specific research projects. For this financial year, we'll be looking at the research project on the effect of customs and culture in socioeconomic development of women within traditional communities, and to see if there are specific barriers that prohibit women from active participation in socioeconomic development opportunities, and coming up with specific recommendations on what should be done going forward. And there will also be this research on the election processes in traditional councils. Those members would know that with the passing of the Traditional and Quiescent Leadership Act, there is now a window period for traditional councils to be reconstituted. And the expectation is that up to March 2023, they will then be continuing with the reconstitution process of traditional councils. Part of the reconstitution and constitution involves the election of members to those councils. And we want to do research on how those elections are conducted practically so that in future we can then advise on whether there needs to be specific regulations that should be issued by the minister on election processes and traditional councils. The next slide then looks at the further implementation of the Traditional and Quiescent Leadership Act, that the area of the Act, Section 50 in particular, deals with at least two things. One is the establishment of local houses of traditional and Quiescent leadership. And so for that particular area, we wish to introduce regulations in that area so that there is greater consistency and uniformity in the manner in which the local houses are being established in the different provinces. So that's what that particular target is about. And the next slide, if you could just assist to move that one, we have developed a three-year implementation plan of the Traditional and Quiescent Leadership Act. So it deals with specific projects, particularly if you look at this current period now, there will be a greater emphasis on the actual constitution of councils themselves and all the work that is related to those councils coming into effect and performing their responsibilities. So this target just reflects the specific projects in that plan that we'll be focusing on during the current financial year. In the next slide, it deals with the work that we started doing in the past on customary laws of succession and genealogies for kinships. we would take one kingship or queenship per annum. But we've realized that to fast track this kind of work, we'll have to go through a process where we actually assist provinces through guidelines and workshopping, so that provinces can then themselves be involved in this work. Some of the kingships and queenships we have spoken to have expressed an interest in this area, saying we would like to do it, but show us how we need to do this work, and that's what the focus will be during the course of this this financial year. And on the next slide, we then saying that that work should not be limited to kingships and queenships, and that provincial counterparts should then take that work forward in terms of senior traditional leadership as well. So that whilst at least initially from our side, we'll focus on the kingships and queenships, they should then, based on the guidelines and the workshopping that we'll have done, assist senior traditional leaderships as well to do the same kind of work. On the next slide, this slide just then captures one of the critical developments coming out of the Traditional and Quaisan Leadership Act, which is the establishment of the Commission on Quaisan Matters, which started its work with effect from the 1st of September. And the slide just deals with targets for that commission, because they will be receiving applications from Khoisan leaders and communities for recognition. They will be investigating those applications. And then secondly, they will be making recommendations as who should be recognized. And this slide just covers the targets in terms of the work of the commission during the current financial year. If you can move to the next slide. The next slide focuses specifically on the implementation of the Customary Initiation Act. And just like the TKLA, we have developed an implementation plan here with specific annual targets. So the ones for the 2022-23 financial year, the four annual targets that we have identified there, those will be the focus for implementation during this year. And we just indicate the examples of the projects that are involved there, such as the establishment of provincial initiation coordinating committees, the registration of traditional surgeons, and the registration of initiation schools. Next slide. That then takes us to the third and last program, which is that of institutional support and coordination. Just go to the next slide. So here, we'll have a project that looks at what we have seen as a challenging area in terms of the institution of traditional leadership, which is that of the traditional leadership entering into partnerships. So Section 24 of the Act says that they may enter into partnerships with municipalities, with the government departments, or with any institution or body. And there's been concerns raised in the past that some of these partnerships are not well structured and do not benefit the communities, and so on. So last year we developed a guideline on the implementation of Section 24 of the Act, and now we'll be focusing on actual workshopping to assist in the implementation of that guideline to facilitate much more credible partnerships that can be entered into at the local level. And then we've also identified the districts in the country with traditional leaderships, and we've come to that number of 32. And we're saying the local houses there are a key lever through which, a key structure through which traditional leadership can participate in the district development model. So the focus will be focusing on mobilizing them to ensure their participation in the district development model. The next slide. So this slide then deals with the local houses of traditional and Khoisan leadership. We have previously developed a criteria of functionality against which you can assess the functionality of the local houses of traditional and Khoisan leaderships. We've come up with reports out of that. And here the focus is, based on those reports, working with the provinces to make sure that there are intervention plans to close the gaps that inhibit the functionality of the local houses of traditional and Khoisan leadership. And the next one there, just that Section 50 of the TKLA, I earlier indicated that it deals with two aspects. One is the establishment of local houses, but the other is also the functioning of the local house of the local houses. So I think here then there is a greater focus on Section 50 to make sure that there's clarity, understanding, and capacity for those Section 50 functions of local houses to be performed. And on the next slide. This is about capacity building now, starting with the Customary Initiation Act. During this last financial year, we've developed a training manual on the Customary Initiation Act, and we'll be targeting 32 traditional leadership structures where we'll be capacitating them in this area. But we're also adding this work that we started doing this year on awareness raising and training on gender-based violence and femicide, where the institutions of traditional leadership, where we have conducted workshops, have indicated that they need more exposure to this area of work. So we'll continue with that work as well during the course of this financial year. Next slide. The remainder of the presentation really deals with issues of social cohesion and nation building. Honorable Chair, that will be targeting social cohesion dialogues. The target for this year will be on the important matters around tribalism and living with foreign nationals, which are getting a lot of attention, to make sure that we engage in dialogues around these matters and find each other in terms of how we address the challenges that exist in traditional communities in these areas. And then also to ensure that traditional leadership participates in national days programs of government, such as Heritage Day, celebrations, and all the other national days that are there to promote social cohesion and nation building. And then on the next slide, we just also indicate that in addition to this, there is a social cohesion program which was consulted with provinces, and the issue is just to make sure that program now is implemented and is monitored. In addition to looking at the functionality of local houses, the National House has indicated that we should also look at the functionality of provincial houses. So we've added this target as well, that will be assessing the functionality of provincial houses so that just like the local houses, we can identify areas where there are challenges and come up with intervention plans. And finally, Honorable Chair, the budget allocations of the department over the medium term period, we just indicate that the total, if you look at 2022 and 2023, towards the extreme right of the presentation in color purple, the total is 177 million, just over 177 million. When we just would like to draw the attention of members also, if you look at the other columns towards the left, that it shows how the growth has been over the years. This has not been really that much, and particularly with this year, that is 177 million that we share as DTA with the Sierra Rights Commission. We share it with the National House of Traditional and Khoisan Leaders. And now we share it also with the Commission on Khoi and San matters. So what is reflected there under research policy and legislation includes a budget for the Commission on Khoi and San matters. Under institutional support and coordination, it includes a support for the National House, as well as a transfer for the Sierra Rights Commission. And that transfer is reflected at the bottom there under economic classification, where we talk about payments, transfers and subsidies. That 46.8 million, that is the transfer to the Sierra Rights Commission. And the next slide just shows the same information where we do a split in terms of the pie chart. I will not repeat that information. And then that takes us to the last one, Honorable Chair, which requests the committee to note the annual performance plan and the budget allocations as presented. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, honorable members, it's your turn. I think we have been taking notes on the three presentations. I'll be taking your hands as they come up. Then the first one would be Honorable Spies, Honorable Teza, and Honorable Matumba. Honorable Spies.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, I only have a question on one specific matter that has got to deal with the APP of DECOC, and that specifically with reference to the Community Works Program. I'm glad that the Minister is still with us, because the Minister would recall I've asked a question on this. I see that quite a huge amount of money is allocated towards the CWP program. Now, Chairperson, through you, if that is the case, I'm concerned that we are throwing money at a program yet again that is not yielding tangible results. And I'm going to say to you, I have received last night and this morning calls again from CWP workers in my constituency who has not been paid, no explanation given why they were paid, yet we were given the assurance by the minister that things would change. These are ordinary people on the ground. I've walked with them through their areas, through their sites. They have no uniforms. They have received uniforms a while back. When they receive it, they must divide it up amongst each other, one set of uniforms. Now, that cannot be the case, Chairperson. Yet, we are throwing billions at this program. We are throwing a huge amount of the budget allocation at this program. I am mentioning this because it, to me, seems it's money wasted. I want to know if the implementing agents are receiving money to make this program work and run effectively. Why are they not doing what is expected of them when they receive the money for the work they are supposed to do? And I would like the Mr. Pretorius to respond to this if he's in this meeting, and I think he is. I send him a message. My concern is each APP we are looking at, this thing comes up of the Community Works Program, and we are being told this is being thrown at it, and yet we do not see any change. Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, sorry, Chair. My last one was on MISA, the youth graduate program. I would like to just understand from which, where around the country are the 150 youth that is part of this program. Thank you.
Next speaker is Honorable Kaiser.
Thank you very much, Chair. Welcome the presentation. I will speak through the presentation, Chair. The first one being the MISA on slide 22, we say a number of municipalities supported with the rolling out of local government for infrastructure development and procurement management is equals to 20, but they are not saying which municipalities are those and why. What is the reason for them being selected now? Because we're not going to have a sense of which municipalities, because we also in the community know municipalities that are not, that would seek to be supported in terms of infrastructure delivery and procurement management. And apart from the fact that the procurement process of municipality is really astray in the sense that they have to outsource all sorts of things, even simple things like compiling financial statements, and then on slide 10. They speak to the internal audit, Chair. And my interest is whether there's training there's enough training of the internal audit teams by those in terms of transferring the skills from the consultants, which are not ever rotated in municipalities even. What is the plan there? What is the time frame? When can we see the capacity being built within those internal processes? And then, Chair, on traditional affairs, I've got a case, Chair, that has been dragging for a very long time in the traditional community. There are disputes, there is gender-based violence. And you can see, Chair, there in slide 6 of this particular presentation, that the traditional leadership actually speaks to the issues of gender-based violence. But indeed, the in that community of Escort in Emangweni, there is a situation which still persists, that the Pietermaritzburg court had taken a decision that the rightful heir to the throne must be signed by the provincial premier Sihlezi Galala, who has not done that up to date. And there are clear pictures of people that have been murdered. In 1 week, 13 people get murdered, and nothing is said about that, even at this level. And you can rest assured, Chair, that we're here to do that. And there is nothing. What is preventing the provincial premier to sign off a simple thing like a court order to say the rightful owner to the throne is this particular Mazibuko, and we follow up. It's almost 2 years now, and there's nothing that is happening. And then on slide 14, Chair, the department speaks about social cohesion. Don't you think that DG, you should speak to the issues of justice first? Because often the focus here is such that there should be reconciliation, integration of the disputing parties, and that is nice to say, and whereas there is no justice in terms of ensuring that communities are given their leadership, and they can be led effectively, and the crime can be reduced. Women are dying. Intimidations continue to escalate. Crime is at escalating proportions there. And don't you think that this should be the focus? And then we speak to the issues of functional impacts, Chair. In which municipalities are MPEX functional? What are the learnings drawn from the functional MPEX? What is the turnaround period and enabling monitoring environment in this regard? Because we have to go to get a sense whether oversight committees in the municipalities are indeed doing what they are supposed to do, because it even says there, Chair, that the oversight committees in municipalities must be led by an opposition, and often this is not happening because there's lots of outsourcing that's going on, and a lot of dictatorship in terms of who is to get these services and to provide to municipalities. So it's a question of when and how and what will we do to ensure that these municipalities have impactful impacts, particularly on the received reports from the Section 56 managers in the municipalities. I think that's about it. I will pack it there. I submit, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Honorable
Kaba, can you mute yourself?
Can you assist her to mute?
Honorable Matumba.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, I see here on page 6 of the report, that is the first presentation, that is speaking of the support and the intervene on institutional capacity. One thing I don't see here that is a serious matter of concern is consequences management. Minister, departments, provincial departments came here before us, and none of them could speak on consequences management in terms of UIF that was reported to them. None of them said we implemented Section 32 of Municipal Financial Management Act in terms of consequences management. Management in municipalities reported unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, or with wasteful expenditure. MPEC went and investigated, but nothing happened to anyone. The department itself couldn't explain, the provincial departments couldn't explain what they did when it comes to reported UIF to them. It is only whistleblowers and SIU, Hawks, and SAPS who have to come in and act. But you can't get it that this is what the municipality did. This is what the department did. Or department itself using Section 32 to go and report matter to relevant authorities outside the municipality. So I would have loved to see the implementation of consequences management, because this institutional capacity, sometimes you think that there is no capacity, when capacity is there but clouded by corruption that is caused because of there are no consequences in every action that these people take. Because we shouldn't be at a point where we are worried about things like corruption, things like potholes, electricity and water loss, failure to prepare financial statements. We should have been discussing the implementation of ideology here as politicians, not simple things that management and administration should have been doing. I mean, patching potholes should have been the last thing we sit as politicians in parliament to discuss. Those are the things they should have been doing. Honorable spoke about financial statement. I won't cover it. But Minister, I want to speak about this one that is very much important. It covers our primary politics as previously disadvantaged individuals. In page 12, you are saying three smart city, there are towns I identified for redesign and refurbishment as smart cities. This is what I found. Let me remind am I audible?
You are.
Okay. Chair, we know that it was identified that South Africa is the colony of special type. And in response to that, in 1959, in Morocco, you said you are going to achieve national democratic society through national democratic revolution. And this means what? You are going to build economic infrastructure for previously disadvantaged, because the economic infrastructure of the internal colonizer is not in any way meant to benefit our people. So in addressing that, what should have been in paragraph 12 is that you were supposed to be telling us not about smart cities, but giving economic infrastructure to the previously disadvantaged. We can talk of smart cities when our own people are still using pit toilets, when our own people in Limpopo there, children are dying in pit toilets, and we are speaking of developing towns that were never towns that we said their economic infrastructure that is not meant to benefit us. We were supposed to be saying we are going to develop Saselemani into a town. We were supposed to be saying we are going to develop Mutare into a town. We were supposed to be saying we are closing the gap. In 1951, Che, South Africa gained independence. And that independence we don't celebrate. Why? Because there are those who gained independence and developed themselves. Now it is time for us to cover that gap. And for us to say we are going to have smart cities, we are going to identify small towns and make them smart cities, while people in Bembe are dying, being eaten by crocodiles, fetching water, is to be adventurous and is to be against your own resolution that you took in Mogoro Conference when you said you want to achieve national democratic society. But unfortunately, you are speaking of rainbow nation. I don't know where it comes from, but that national democratic society, it's lost someone. And as I'm speaking here, I'm saying let's go and cover the gap that was caused by colonialism of special type. Because currently, as things stand, blacks are still colonized. They don't have the independence of having their own economic infrastructure. If they want to open a business, they must go to town, to the head office of the colony, and open the business there. Because where they are, there is no sewage system, there is no electricity capacity, they can't. They must go to the head office. Now, I can talk more of the CWP, but few things I can say about CWP is that CWP is being changed from what it is supposed to be. CWP is meant to assist young job people who are capable of being employed to look for employment. That's why you don't work there every day. You work there, you get a little stipend so that you can use that stipend to look for a job. It is not like EPWP that says in providing service delivery. Let's put food on the table to families that can't afford. Now, we have asked many times, and we have never get that report, to say, what are CWP programs? We want to know, what exactly are these people doing? Secondly, who is employed in this CWP? And is it serving its purpose? We must also get a report from 26,000 that was in CWP. 6,000 used the stipend and now they are employed. CWP is serving people. So that if CWP is not serving people in terms of helping our people to look for a job, we find another program that will fast-track this process of looking for it. Because this CWP, instead of assisting our people, is abusing them and they are crying because of this CWP. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Matumba, we can't hear you.
He has what? He has completed what he was saying.
Oh, he has completed. Can we allow Honorable Simon?
Thank you. Before I go to the presentation, maybe let me first start by saying we acknowledge the presentation and thank you so much for trusting them. To the CEO of MISA, before I interact with your presentation, my good sir, I want to make a special request. I've been harassed by people of Eking Indlovu in case in under the municipality called Umlalazi. Yes, they are saying they do not have water for the past 8 months. The taps are dry, there is no explanation given. Even the water trucks are not, I'm saying, I want us to, outside of your presentation, make a special request that we make a follow-up and check as to say what exactly is the problem so that we can then be able to respond to our people there in KZN. Now, coming back to your presentation, my question is around that you've raised the program, the youth program graduate, which you are not specific about, just to say whether you are going to roll out this program throughout the country in all the municipalities. When I thought of that, I said, look, it might not be possible given the fact that your resources are very small and you can't really be rolling them. So please be specific on where exactly are you planning to roll out that particular program. And I must congratulate you for thinking about that program. For me, it makes a lot of sense because then it will be able to address the issue of unemployment on the ground, but also give much needed experience to the our graduates that are currently sitting without experience of work, but also be able to prepare them for future opportunities. That's one. And then coming to the Department of Cooperative Governance, when we recently visited Free State on an oversight, Two district municipalities have raised an issue around I'll tell you now, a sharing of powers and functions between district and local municipalities. and both of them are raising it very sharp in what they seem to be raising is that there were powers and functions that were removed from them as district municipalities, and they believe that those were supposed to be left with them. Now, I want to check whether we are able to make sure that we intervene, or can we craft a plan in order to make sure that we relook at those powers and functions that were removed from them in order to make sure that we create and promote the good intergovernance relations between the district and its local municipalities. Chair, some of the things that I wanted to ask, I think Honorable Mutumba has raised them. I'll just stop there for now.
Thank you very much. Then that move us to allow the department to respond. Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask Dikok to respond, and then Misa and Dite, then I'll come at the end. Thank you.
Okay. Chairperson and members, I'm joined by a few people from the department, so I'll respond to some of the questions and then also hand over some of the other officials. Perhaps if I could start with the question on capacity building, the one that was raised by the Honorable Matumba. And Honorable Matumba wanted to know why is it that our capacity building is not focusing on audit outcomes. So as part of the capacity building strategy, we are jointly with National Treasury. We have appointed Perry, who's already begun to actually look at exactly how it is that we will continue with capacity building within the municipalities, and specifically with the training of the budget treasury officers. Something else that is also included in the strategy is also how we will then capacitate the impacts and audit committees so that they're actually able to exercise their oversight roles. And we've also already began a process of consulting all stakeholders so that they will also be clear about how it is that they will then be involved in the improvement of audit outcomes. And something else that the department has also looked at is how is it that we can improve record keeping, with at least how can we support municipalities to improve record keeping. This has become quite a big issue, especially for the conducting of audits by the AG and documents not being able to be found. So we are jointly also looking at a system that would better assist municipalities when it comes to document and management. I think the questions as they would relate into the CWP, I'm joined by Mr. Pretoria, so he can just pick up on all those particular questions. And the other question that was also raised was just around the issue of consequence management and how that is then also undertaken within the municipalities and whether they are receiving the support that they should from provincial departments. Of course, as members would know, you know, the disciplinary cases really, it forms part of the priority of the municipalities. From a national perspective, we therefore do not have, let me say, direct access when it comes to actual disciplinary matters per se, save for the fact that we also, through our capacity building process, have provided some training around how it is that municipalities, especially the MM and his executives, would need to go about disciplinary proceedings. And of course, we are also looking at how it is that we can strengthen this area, because we also then would link it specifically to the area that is also responsible for anti or counter corruption within the department. And there, once again, we do look at how it is that we can engage municipalities through awareness programs that we do have around anti-corruption. And what we are beginning to look at is how it is that we can extend our reach and make it much more scalable, because one of the lessons that we've learned in the department is that we have focused perhaps just on perhaps 10 districts in a year, and it doesn't necessarily give us the impact that we need to give. So this is an area that we're also looking at, how it is that we can strengthen practically. Thank you, Chair, and I'll hand over to Mr. Pretorius just on the CWP element. Or question, sorry.
Thank you, DG, and good afternoon, Chairperson, honourable members, and to the Minister and the Deputy Ministers. In relation to the question asked by Honourable Spies, the payment system for CETA, I think we have on a number of occasions responded to questions on this regard. The payment system is hosted at CETA, and it's unfortunate that almost every month we have some form of disruption of the payment system that then delays payment to participants. We did last year try to fix this and to introduce modifications to the system, but it became clear that our future solution must lie outside of the CETA network. So we have developed a business case for a new system, and we are currently in the process of procuring and appointing a service provider to develop a new system. So we think that once, hopefully towards the end of the year, once we have the new system in place, that we will no longer experience these delays. It is really unfortunate, and we don't think that, we hope every month that the system will be stable, and most months, unfortunately, that is not the case. When it comes to the procurement of PPE and uniforms, when we introduced the new CWP implementation policy in October last year, we put in place very strict requirements for the procurement conducted by implementing agents. So in the past, there was almost no oversight over procurement done by implementing agents. And we found quite often that this procurement was non-compliant, and irregular, and did not deliver value for money. So we introduced quite strict procurement requirements in the policy to make sure that all procurement is done in full compliance with the PFMA and Treasury regulations. And unfortunately, we then found that many of the implementing agents, despite claiming in their tender documents that they are able to do so, were not really able to procure in a compliant manner. So they would submit their procurement documents to us for scrutiny before they start the process. And in many cases, we then had to keep on returning these documents and advising them then how to do it differently so that their procurement is in line. So over the past 6 months, that has led to a slowdown in procurement. We have seen now in March that this seems to have been resolved, and that the implementing agents, at least for the most part, now understand what is required of them. And that going forward, that this procurement will now happen. I think also the question raised by Honourable Matumba in relation to youth, we did, after the last portfolio committee, provide a detailed report to the portfolio committee on exactly the kind of work that is being done at each site. But the broader question of participants exiting, finding work and exiting, I think that is a critical area that the CWP is focusing on going forward. Even if we do not have statistics as to how many find permanent opportunities, because when participants leave the program, they don't normally tell us why, they just stop turning up. So we are not always sure why they leave the program. But it's clear that the model we used, the old model we used, both when it comes to training as well as finding useful work, did not really serve the purpose of the CWP. And I think we're in full agreement on that, which is why we have, when we introduced the new model, also in one province appointed a government entity to experiment with different ways of doing this. So the National Youth Development Agency was appointed in Mpumalanga to be an implementing agent. And there we've seen very encouraging results of participants actually being supported to get relevant and appropriate training. Because in the past, we think the training was done for the sake of compliance. If we said 20,000 participants must be trained, the implementing agents didn't really care what training was provided. It was simply putting people in a room and making sure they end up with a certificate. And that training wasn't always useful and didn't always contribute to the real skills base of participants. So that is what we are, in terms of the new model, busy changing. It will obviously take a little bit of time, but we agree that that's a critical part of the CWP going forward. We are also running two other pilots where we are partnering with other organizations, not with implementing agents, to run specific projects. One, for instance, is on road maintenance, where we then make sure that participants are trained, that they develop the necessary real skills that can enable them to take to start their own businesses or to find other employment elsewhere. So as I said, Honorable Matumba, at the moment, I think for the majority of the provinces, with the possible exception of Mpumalanga, very few participants actually exit the program. But that is one of our key focus areas going forward in terms of the new model, to make sure that we implement the redesigned model in a way that actually allow participants to exit and then also new participants to enter the program. Because the challenge also is when nobody exits the program, we can't bring new participants into the program. So we hope that during this year, this process will start to gain momentum and that we will then start to see real results. Thank you, Chair. I think those were the two questions about CWP.
Thank you, Chair. If you will allow, I'd like to ask Dr. Kevin Naidoo to then respond on the functional impacts question.
Yes, allowed.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. And good afternoon, honorable members of the committee, Minister and Deputy Minister Papela. So, Honorable Treza asked the question around, you know, which municipalities are we going to be focusing on in terms of monitoring functionality? The short answer to that would be all municipalities. And it's not going to be just the impacts that we are going to be monitoring. It's going to be all committees of council that a municipality has. So because we believe that, you know, the committee system is a very, very important system within the entire value chain of oversight. And if, you know, committees function in the manner that they're supposed to, what we see here presently happening where, you know, the portfolio committee is asking the department or the ministry to account, we would like to be seeing this kind of activity mirrored in municipalities. So we're going to be seeing how we take the extension or extending the work that we're doing around monitoring impacts, as well as seeing how we focus on other committees of council as well. So that would be the response specifically on that question that was raised, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. Sorry, Chairperson, and then just to respond on the question around the smart cities, I thought Mayor Mabidilala could do that for us. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members and Minister.
in response to the question of the smart cities, I would like to submit to the committee that the reason why we are developing rural areas and rural towns into smart cities is because we're trying to address the issue of people moving more into urban areas, and we conscious as a department on the assessment that we have made that there is rapid urbanization and people are moving towards the urban areas instead of staying where they are. So the approach that we have taken is that we need to develop these rural areas so that there is local economic investments by also the private sector to make sure that people live and work where they live. So what we are trying to do here is to address urbanization and spatial planning so that we make sure that no one is left behind. There is basic services in all the areas, in all corners of our country, in every municipality. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Where are we now? Can we allow Mesa?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will start with the first question raised by Honorable Spitz on the young graduate program. We advertise a chairperson nationally and also place adverts to universities and also to municipalities to recruit young graduates. And also answering the question around the specifics on the very same question raised by Honorable Msimang. We do have a list, Honorable Msimang. We are covering almost all nine provinces, and about 102 municipalities where we are deploying these 150 young graduates. And on the question raised, Honorable Teresa, with regard to the support to the 20 municipalities on infrastructure procurement, our target is on the 64 municipalities that are part of the State of Local Government report, which are found to be dysfunctional. A number of them have challenges around infrastructure procurement. So the 20 municipalities that we have targeted are drawn from that list. But we do have the list. We will then formulate and report and submit to the committee. In fact, we will try and get the list of all municipalities that will be supporting and submit to the committee members immediately after this session chair. And on the question, on the point, not a question, Honorable Msimang has raised the matter of making Indlovu. If we can get more details, Honorable Msimang will be happy to dispatch our engineers with immediate effect to go and do the assessment of what is the cause of the water problem there. And then we'll then come up with an intervention measure to address the situation. I'm not sure Gungundlovu, whether it's in Gungundlovu or is in which area in KZN. And if you can, we can get those details, I'll be happy, including the contact person of that our teams can talk to. We'll try and send a team this week to do the assessment. Thank you very much. I'm not sure if there's any other point I haven't responded, but I
try to summarize all the issues that are based on
that. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. There is a specific issue raised by Honorable Trevor relating to a case where there was a decision that was taken, a ruling that was taken by the court, and the challenges around the implementation of that ruling. Chairperson, we are aware of that matter, and we previously raised it with our counterparts, both the head of department of COCTA in the province, as well as the DG in the province, who indicated that it was being attended to. But the Honorable Gaza is right that indeed the matter has taken quite a while to finalize. And I think what we would need to do is to make sure that that even the executive authority of the department in the province is the matter that is raised with the executive authority of the department, because what we agree between ourselves and our counterparts is that where a court has come up with such a ruling, the department should not be found to be on the wrong side of the law. So that's indeed the escalation that we will pursue to make sure that if there are particular challenges around the practicalities of implementation and assistance is required, that assistance can be provided. But I think that also then addresses the issue Honorable Gaza is raising around social cohesion and the issue of communities having the right leaders. I think certainly the reality of the sector where disputes arise is that it's not in all instances that those disputes involve government. They are disputes that are just amongst family members themselves. And what needs to be done is just to make sure that they are resolved as amicably as possible. But unfortunately, the majority of them end up in the courts. In the presentation, we indicated that work around customary laws of succession. And I think with the workshopping and the guidelines and the support that we have in mind, it should create a better basis in future for the minister to even provide regulations in this regard, so that there is a requirement on the part of royal families to make sure that this customary laws of succession are documented as a legal requirement, so that at the time of decisions being made about succession, there's a very clear documented and updated document that should be updated periodically that can then serve as a basis that can be used for that purpose. But certainly the issues of social cohesion in a context where there are disputes become difficult, because then there will be different groupings that are fighting each other. And we hope that this kind of intervention to make sure that it is not government that is found to be on the wrong side, but secondly, to make sure that if there is a certain level of predictability through documented and signed off customary laws of succession, that it can contribute towards the kind of social cohesion that we are talking about in those communities. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the officials have responded, but I just want to say, I think it was Honorable Matumba, about the issue that he's raising about smart cities, so smart towns versus building towns. I think he's probably right, but maybe it shouldn't be either or. It should be where you can improve the town, because now those towns have to cater for everybody, including our people, the people that were previously disadvantaged, but also
building new towns. I agree with him. But I think that's probably a discussion we should have in a maybe it just as a discussion on its own. Because we are trying to do that, but because of the interest of time, I can't go into the details of that. I just want to also respond to Honorable Khalipe's issue about Mawoti. The information that I've got about Mawoti is that there is no NPO that has been appointed. I've checked with the province, I've checked with the Deputy Minister of Social Development. The people in that shelter cook for themselves. But there is an NPO that sometimes helps. It's a local NPO. It volunteers its services, Masisizane Center. But otherwise, there's no NPO that is appointed. People cook for themselves. But I think the reason they lock, they say that sometimes people want to come and take the food away and go with it to where they are or their homes. But I will follow up even more, but that's the information that I have for now. I think the question of CWP is really something that we are grappling with, because we have come to the conclusion that the way it was structured was not the way it should work. So the remodeling and the new policy framework is trying to address some of the issues that for instance, Honorable Spies is raising. So for now, that's really what I will respond to, in addition to what has been said by the senior officials of the department. Thank you.
Then, Minister, are you true?
Yes, thank you. Maybe I said thank you too softly. I am. Thank you very much to all the members. Thank you.
Otherwise, thank you very much, honorable members. There's no minute that is left now. We should be running to Parliament. Thank you very much for the session. I'm sure the session was more informative in terms of both presentations, the original, the earlier presentation, as well as the APPs, as we have noted some of the issues. Otherwise, I'm sure with our questions raised, we will always continue to engage, talk about issues. But I think for now, we should be satisfied. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, and your DMs and the teams. And thank you, members. Thank you, officials from Parliament. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.